Major League Baseball, I'm going to be shocked if they're able to fully restart. I'm really skeptical that baseball is going to be able to pull it off. I think that's the league that's most at jeopardy with all this. The NBA has to be really lucky, right? So their plan is actually pretty ironclad in many ways, because they are really creating a full bubble, and they're truly quarantining people. They're doing things in advance. The biggest threat to them is, are the athletes actually going to be able to, and the rest of the staff, be able to stay within the bubble for, you know, upwards of 2 months?
Good morning. It is 6 a.m. It is Joey Vendetta along with George Russick, and this is Leadoff. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your Rogers cell phone, or you can text us at 590-590. The Chicago Blackhawks are standing by their name. They are expanding awareness on indigenous contributions. Walmart, Target, join Nike and Dick's Sporting Goods in pulling Redskins merch. Deshaun Jackson apologizes after anti-Semitic tweets. MLS has been forced to rejig their tournament schedule in the wake of more positive tests. Adam Silver worries positive tests may pop the NBA bubble. And the Blue Jays resumed training at Rogers Center on Tuesday. Our guest this morning, Buck Martinez, at 8:30. We'll talk about the Blue Jays and Major League Baseball. Brian Burke at 8 o'clock. The NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Central at noon. And, of course, we will talk about Toronto and Edmonton as bubble cities and what the Maple Leaf chances look like in this Stanley Cup tournament. And John Tory, the mayor of Toronto, will join us at 10 after 7, and we'll get his insight on various things, including gathering in public to maybe watch some of these sporting events. Good morning, Mr. Russick. How are you today?
I'm super. How are you, Joey?
I'm excited, George, once again to be here
Are
with you. Excited. I'm thrilled. Are you kidding me?
Thank
How
you.
Could I not be? This
you
is fantastic.
You're so sweet.
You know what? I'm all about the sweetness, and I'm heading straight to the dentist right after this because I haven't gone in about 6 months since this whole thing kicked in, and we weren't allowed to be in close proximity with people who did things to our bodies to make us look and feel better. What about you?
I'm probably going to have a nap right after the show. Like I'm
George, I admire people who nap. I admire the concept of napping. I haven't been able to do
nap?
It in many, many years. No, no.
You're not
I can't
a
shut my brain off. Well, like many people, I can't shut my brain off. I don't
really?
Have that capability. No, constantly
well, then
thinking.
How do you sleep then?
Constantly. I don't sleep, George. I'm a vampire. I hang upside down. No sleeping. I come out of a casket. I wear a cape. And I eat Count Chocula cereal for breakfast now. I switched from Nutella yesterday. This morning it was Count Chocula, and that begs me the question. The question of the day today is, what is your favorite cereal? 590, 590. What's your go-to? I went with Nutella for a while. This morning I saw the Count Chocula. Man, that sugar content is through the roof. I am buzzing hard right now. So killed about a half a box of it with some full 2% milk. Usually I go with skim or oat or coconut or almond, but didn't have any. So it was actually a salad bowl of Count Chocula. Because I don't like to waste time with these tiny bowls, George.
Can I just change the question just a little bit?
Well, George, that's what you're wont to do, so please do.
Okay. What cereal are you addicted to instead of what's your favorite? The one you're addicted to. Cause I have a box of Cinnamon Toast Crunch upstairs that if I started eating, it's insane. Cinnamon Toast Crunch is ridiculously addictive. Captain Crunch is addictive.
Love,
that cereal
Captain
is
Crunch.
So addictive. My man, CC Sabathia, back in the day, Hall of Fame, well, soon to be Hall of Fame pitcher, used to crush a box a day, Joey, of Captain Crunch. A box a day.
Text us at 590, 590. What cereal are you addicted to, or what cereal do you love? George, back in the heyday prior to me getting sober, I used to snort Captain Crunch, chop it up, 3 a.m. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. You can't even imagine how that worked out by 6 a.m. I was like, whoa, this tastes really
imagine
weird.
The parties you had with Captain Crunch. Did you get the stuff?
Me and the captain. hey, Captain, you got the stuff? And he'd have that stupid hat on. That's yeah. Good look. It was a captain's hat, obviously. So,
what's like those Captain Morgan commercials where they lift their leg because you're the captain? Because that's what we all did at the bar. And who orders Captain Morgan anyway?
I actually played ice hockey with a couple of guys in Los Angeles where they shot those commercials. Not all of them. They shot a few of them there. And they were in the commercials. And when we would go to Vegas back in the day and we'd be at the Circle Bar at the Hard Rock, when the Hard Rock was the hottest spot in Vegas, we would stand at the Circle Bar in the middle of the Hard Rock Hotel, which was a scene. It would be packed at all, you know, all the time. It was crazy. And we would do the Captain Morgan lift our leg up, and people would just look at us like we were complete idiots, which at the time we were, but we were certainly not drinking Captain Morgan's. But, George, Captain Morgan's and Captain Crunch, what could that be, that combination?
Hmm.
Think about that one.
Yeah, I'm not a big rum guy.
I didn't even know Captain Morgan's was rum, to be quite honest with you.
Oh, it was.
Thanks for clarifying.
I'm not a big rum guy. Not at all.
Oh, Doug in Brantford just texted us at 590-590. Best cereal is Corn Pops. Contest
what?
Over. Corn
By
Pops.
By the way.
I like them for a minute.
Yeah, they're okay. But I know you mentioned Count Chocula. And I remember when I was a kid, Count Chocula was way more delicious than it is now. And
what
it's
do you
like
think
they
they've
changed
done,
the
George?
Recipe. But
what
still,
have they done to Count Chocula?
Yeah, exactly. It's not as delicious. But still, the milk turns chocolatey when you're done, Joey. How do you
drink
consume
it?
The milk after?
You drink it.
Do you put
just,
the two hands and tilt the bowl and just pour that down your mouth?
Yeah, I used to do that. But you know what, George? I'm going to go off the board here and go with chocolate chip cookies, Chips Ahoy, which I would take a sleeve or two, a row, but I call them sleeves, and I just empty the entire sleeve into the bowl, add the milk, and then get the spoon and chop it up and turn it into a cookie-type quicksand. Just the right amount of milk to make it quicksand-esque. And then eat it like porridge until you got to the end. And then there would be the dregs or the remnants of the cookies in with the milk. And then I would do the two-hander and drink it like I was drinking the last vestiges of the greatest bowl of soup ever made.
Interesting. Yeah, this conversation we're having.
Pathetic,
I feel
maybe.
I feel like the regular co-host of this show, Mike Zygmantas, who's a health freak, wouldn't be partaking in any of this that we're talking about. He'd probably have soy milk and some sort of very quinoa-based bland cereal.
Yeah, it's awful.
But when you putting Chips Ahoy cookies into a bowl, pouring milk, chopping it up, and consuming it that way, that's actually quite genius. I tip my cap to you, Mr. Joey Vendetta. Because I bet you that was delicious. Because we all, but honestly, I can't remember the last time I have eaten milk and cookies where I dunked a chocolate chip. I don't drink milk by itself. The only time I do consume milk is with cereal. That's it.
I did it last week, George. Two rows.
Yeah?
Two rows. I like Oreos on occasion. Take the Oreos, dump them all in, mash them up. I've been known to do that. Also, social tea cookies. I don't know if you remember those things, but they were around back in the day when people watched Baby Blue movies and used an Electrohome Starcom converter on their television. So the social tea cookies, and they would be spelled social tea, T-H-E, with a little asterisk on the end of the E or an apostrophe or whatever the hell that thing is called. So there was social tea, there was Oreos, there was chocolate chip, Chips Ahoy. Those were my three main go-tos. When we had no Chips Ahoy, we went with the social tea. So what is your go-to addictive favorite cereal? Or you can throw in the wild card and go off the board with the cookie milk mix in a bowl like I was wont to do. So we got, let's see, Honey Nut Cheerios from Chris in Mississauga. Tyler in Oshawa says Trix, and it's not even close. Trix. Are those
you know
Trix
that's
are
only
for
kids, right?
Yeah.
Tyler
silly
knows
rabbit.
Only for kids, right?
Yeah, Silly Rabbit. Sugar Crisp. Rick on the QEW.
Sugar Crisp, really?
Steve and Alora. Raisin Mueslix. Just kidding. I am not livestock. I don't know what that means. Soggy Frosted Flakes. Wait 10 minutes after applying milk. Oh, you know what? I also like Corn Flakes with a bunch of milk and let them get soggy.
Now.
And then Doug in Brantford says, I've done the same chocolate chip cookie soup and it's transcendent. That's what you need. Transcendent.
Yeah.
That says it all. You're not, right there.
Well, hold on. You're a put the cereal first in the bowl and then the milk, right? You're not one of those sociopaths who put the milk in first and then put the cereal on top.
How can you put the milk in first? You don't know. It completely ruins the ability to measure the cookie to milk ratio. You add the milk, not even all at once, a little bit at a time, and then mix the cookies and then add a bit more milk. It creates the perfect paste. And in fact, if you have any patchwork to be done on your walls, you can actually take a spatula and use the cookie paste with the milk to fill in the holes and then paint over it. Works the same as if you're trying to fix the drywall with some, you know, with whatever the hell that stuff is called that they use to patch walls. Bondo.
I might have to put up a poll. What is crazier, Joe? I don't know. Like, can we use the word crazier? Buttoning your shirt,
that, George. It's politically incorrect. People will be offended.
Okay. Well, I know. But what is
more eccentric? What is more
obtuse? What is more obtuse?
Yes.
Buttoning your shirt from the bottom to top, or putting in milk first, then the cereal.
Well, George, if I could button my shirt, because these days I'm a little robust, I would go with.
Are you jolly?
Middle down, and then the top buttons. If I want to look like I'm in a gang in the rough parts of LA, then I button my shirt all the way up top, and then I put a bandana on my head. I don't know if you like that look, George, but the buttoned checkered shirt, and then you hop in your El Camino with the lowering kit, and you eat your chocolate chip cookies in a bowl. Rick from Markham. When I was a kid in the 70s, Kellogg's Frosted Flakes was absolutely the king of cereal. I evolved to Captain Crunch. Corn Pops are absolutely horrible. I don't know who said that, but now I'm eating Quaker Harvest Crunch with fresh peaches and blueberries. That's evolution, my friend. That's evolution.
Well, I like how a lot of these cereals are like, oh, I'm eating Quaker Harvest Crunch. It's just jam full of sugar. People are like, I'm just eating healthier now, eating that delicious cereal.
You know what I've been wanting to eat, George, is I go to this place that's a keto friendly diet when I get extremely depressed about my weight, and I go there and I buy a bunch of stuff that's keto friendly, and they have these cereals that are keto friendly cereals. The only problem is there's something in there that makes you go number two with violence. And I mean, it's whatever it is that's in there. After you have this cereal, I don't know what the chemical is. It might be that same stuff that they put in. There was at one point they were putting something in chips to make them non-fattening. Elastra, I can't remember
Elestra,
the name.
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Elestra. Like, they got to be pumping this cereal full of Elestra, because 15 minutes after eating it, I am looking for, it's a number two festival. It's like the Lollapalooza of number twos. There's multiple lineups. There's headliners. There's opening acts. Yeah. So I got to get back to the traditional cereals, like Cinnamon Toast Crunch rocks, Honey Nut Cheerios with a shot of espresso, and you break the chocolate chip cookies with the sugary milk. Bruno from Woodbridge. That's strong right there. I mean, I don't know how you go to work after you eat that, but Bruno, you are a better man than I. So
you get there,
Georgie,
fast.
Today looks like we are going to potentially get some showers this afternoon, which, based on the weather in southern Ontario, we need. It has been hot and not too muggy, but some showers would be nice. Maybe they'll help repair my lawn, which, like I said, is looking like Ricky Schroeder's head in certain parts. And then tomorrow, sunny and 34. Might get some showers now on Friday. The forecast has changed, 40% chance. And then Saturday, 40% chance. Sunday, 60%. And then back to a mix of sun and cloud on Monday. George, the Toronto Raptors, Nick Nurse, is a guy that, for me, is the coach of the year. And I think it's kind of hard to disagree with what this guy's done with this team, especially from an injury perspective. But now you look at the lineup that he's going to be able to field and put on the court as the team gathers at Walt Disney World Resort in Orlando to hopefully finish the 2019-20 regular season, which I have to say is I'm not going to say in jeopardy, George, but it's dicey. Anything in Florida right now, as if you've been paying attention, is dicey. You've seen MLS has had their issues already. Now, Dallas, the Dallas players already had the virus. Nine guys already had the virus prior to, you know, prior to heading to Florida. But there are other teams that are going to have some issues down in Florida. And even though you're in a bubble, like you look at, you know, the Whitecaps have five players already who are going to miss the tournament. So where does this end? So another team ends up with four, another team's up with the, like, at what point do you call it? But George, what do you feel the chances for the Raptors are to make it back to the NBA Finals?
I think they're pretty good, Joey. I think they're really good. And if you look at the season as a whole, Pascal Siakam stepped up. The defense was incredible. Norm Powell's had a great year. Kyle Lowry continues to be the heart and soul of the Toronto Raptors. And they dealt with a ton of injuries. They were super banged up this year. And now all those guys are healthy. Marc Gasol got a rest, lost some weight. He looks good. The Raptors have that championship pedigree. They know how to win. And I think they are built for a bubble situation that none of us saw coming. And I think that could play to their advantage, actually, Joey. I know playing at Scotiabank and Jurassic Park, it's an insane atmosphere, and it's tough to play at Scotiabank if you're the Raptors. But I think they don't have to potentially go into Milwaukee and do an Eastern Conference final. They know how to win ball games. I like their chances, Joey. I like them at least getting to the Eastern Conference Finals. And if they do, what an absolute slam dunk success season it is for the Raptors. You lose your best player, top two or three player on the planet, and yet you still get to a conference final. I like their chances, and I'm excited to see what the Raptors are going to do, Joey. I really am.
Yeah, and I got to give credit to Nick Nurse on multiple levels, right? This is a guy who's cerebral, and he's not a, you know, he's got the X's and O's down, but I think the part of Nick Nurse that really works in his favor is his humanity, his ability to deal with his players as human beings and speak to them and treat them on a level that I don't think a lot of coaches do. And by that, I mean, he's closer in age than a lot of coaches. He's not old, and he understands what it's like to have a family, right? And several of the players on the team, not to mention the coaching staff, are parents, and they're young parents. They have young children. Nurse himself has a couple of kids that are three and under. And I think that that's really important when you have players on the team that have or have had young families. And this isn't going to be easy. They're going to be away from their families for a minimum of 7 weeks. And it's not a typical training camp, right? Even though the typical training camp is designed to leave you in a place where your family is of minimal distraction. And let's not confuse the issue here. Your family is a distraction even when you're not playing pro sports. Everybody's got family issues. But when basketball is all there is in this so-called bubble, there's going to be some distractions that will be welcome, because I think it's going to be very difficult for certain players to completely isolate, and I think it's going to have a mental effect on the players and the staff and the immediate staff. So, look, when you have a guy like Nurse who actually cares about how the family is, when he says, "How's your wife and kids?" you believe him, as opposed to just being something that you're supposed to say. And I think that Nurse is incredibly good at empathizing, right? And this team was 46-18. That's second best in the East and third in the NBA, as you said yesterday. And they haven't played a game or even practiced 5-on-5 in months. But I think, as you said, with the rest that this team, like every other team is rested, but this is a bit of an older team, some older pieces on this team, that with the rest and the fact that they are healthy, and as you said, Gasol looks lean. My only concern with Gasol is that he's so good at boxing out and being physical that I wonder, you know, how much weight he lost and how that will affect his strength. But you got to figure that he's weight trained and his strength will not be an issue. But I do believe it's going to help his ball distribution and his ability to move quicker and cut quicker in the lane and dish. So this could really play into the Raptors' favor. And you have to go with Kyle Lowry as the guy who's going to lead the charge again, because as much as Kawhi Leonard was the MVP last year, as much as Kawhi Leonard was that missing final piece that helped take this team to a championship, Kyle Lowry, in my mind, had to be right there in terms of culture, in terms of pushing guys, in terms of creating a winning atmosphere, because he's been here the longest and he's seen the ups and downs, and he's a pit bull. And I think this rest is going to really help Kyle Lowry, and I'm looking forward to seeing the Raptors kick it into gear on the 24th, the exhibition season in Orlando. And as I said before, George, my biggest concern here isn't the Raptors. It's all the outside factors and whether this thing even gets completed.
I feel like the NBA is the league that might pull the plug on this if things get out of hand. Because I think they're aware enough with their players and the health and safety of their players that they'll pull the plug on this. And it's something that I've asked numerous guests. I think you and I have had this conversation. LeBron's the guy that he could essentially end the season today if he wanted to. If LeBron James pulled out, I think this whole thing could be in jeopardy in Orlando. He has that much influence, that much clout in the NBA. And if guys like him or Giannis, or you look around the league, James Harden, guys like that test positive, and it takes away from the integrity of the game, I think they pull the plug on this thing. I really do. I think they're aware enough about what this pandemic is. And obviously, they were the trendsetter. We all know Rudy Gobert was patient zero when it came to North American professional sports in the shutdown. So I just feel like the NBA would be the one to shut down. I don't feel that way about the NHL, and I certainly don't feel that way about Major League Baseball, as all these names continue to pull out day in, day out, and there's so much uncertainty that the Blue Jays season starts in almost 2 weeks, and I hope all the players are going to be there for that opening game in Tampa, but at least the NBA and NHL are trying to stay safe, and you kind of alluded to it there earlier. Yeah, I don't know what Major League Baseball is going to look like and how many players are going to pull out. And what does that do for the integrity of the game? If all these star players are out, yeah, it's Major League Baseball, but it's not best on best because these guys are pulling out.
Hey, look, I really hope that on the Major League Baseball side for the Toronto Blue Jays, you get a bunch of superstars pulling out. It would be great to see a few Yankees pull out, because the Blue Jays are just young and dangerous enough that if some teams get a little bit weaker, the Blue Jays could, a shortened season, you're looking at 34 wins, you probably get a playoff spot. So, you know, a team that's got definitely some question marks in the outfield and some question marks pitching-wise, but if Hyunjin Ryu, and I saw a picture of him yesterday, Hyunjin Ryu kind of looks like he ate a little too much chocolate chip cookies with the milk. I don't know if you saw the shot of him, but the angle may have been less than flattering. He had his mask on incorrectly.
Like,
yeah, no, but picture. even for Hyunjin Ryu, he looked like he went deep on the cookie cupboard. So hopefully it was just an angle picture. But look, Hyunjin Ryu is a great pitcher. Again, having lived in LA as long as I have, I'm familiar with him. I saw him pitch. Great control pitcher, pinpoint accuracy, and you got to give him the benefit of the doubt that he's coming into a different league. So it's going to take a minute for teams, opposing teams, to get a book on him. And if we can get some, if Tanner Roark turns out to be something, and then Nate Pearson makes this team, and Baruchy can pitch, if this pitching staff can be held together, and again over the course of a 60-game season, it's going to be a lot easier than if it was a regular, season. So we've got so many good young players that really don't know any better, and if Biggio and Guerrero and Bichette and Lourdes Gurriel can be who they have been and shown to be, and Randall Grichuk can play well, and maybe Teoscar Hernandez feels better than he has in the past, I like the chances for the Blue Jays to make some noise. And as you said, with baseball's superstars, a lot of them making noise that they're bowing out and getting back to the NBA. Adam Silver as you've said, is a very sensitive guy when it comes to player needs and player responses. And he has basically said that there is the possibility that the NBA is going to shut down. And if the pandemic infiltrates the league's temporary campus in Orlando, you know, the games are set to resume July 30th. We're sitting here on July the 8th. The cases have exploded in Florida. They've exploded in Texas. They've exploded in Arizona. California is going in the wrong direction and set a record yesterday for the most cases. And we're sitting here in Toronto, and we have the mayor, John Tory, on at 7:10, and we are going in the right direction. And it's so interesting, George, to be in a country like Canada, and much like many places in Europe and a country like New Zealand, where they have handled this in a very methodical fashion, yet the NBA and MLS have made what looks to be a terrible decision to hold their seasons in Florida. And you had to think, George, I got to ask you a question before we take the break. How did you not see this coming if you were the commissioner of the National Basketball Association or Don Garber in MLS? How did you not see Florida coming?
Well, but when these decisions were made, things weren't spiraling out of control like they are now, right?
Yeah, but wait a second. But the NHL still hasn't officially announced Toronto and Edmonton. And I know that you have to make plans, and I understand it. But I think the NBA and MLS both jumped the gun in anointing Florida the place they were doing this.
But it all made sense to have Orlando as the hub, right? At Disney World, that they have the complex, the ESPN Wide World of Sports. Television would be super easy. They just need to flip a switch. It's all there. You have all the places to stay where these players can stay socially distant and be in a bubble. It made a ton of sense, Joey, and I still think it does, that if they're really safe and they take this super seriously and the players do and everyone involved do and they stay super vigilant, I think they can pull it off because of if the bubble stays clean. And Major League Soccer, a lot of the guys, including FC Dallas, who pulled up, they weren't taking it seriously, and they shut it down. The onus is on the players and everyone involved to try to stay as socially distant as possible. And if they're able to do that, we'll see sports. There'll be an MLS match tonight, Joey. You going to watch it? Orlando and Miami tonight. I'm going to watch it. It's 8 o'clock. I'm going to watch some Major League Soccer tonight.
How are you
going to lie, Joey? Probably going to sprinkle a bet on it.
George, I'm going to watch it, and I'm going to have chocolate chip cookies in a bowl with chocolate milk. I'm celebrating. I'm throwing chocolate milk in the bowl tonight. That's big.
I sent out the poll, Joey. The poll is posted. What's weirder?
George?
What's weirder? Milk first, then cereal, buttoning bottom to top.
George, if I could button my shirt, I would have a parade. And I'm going to ask John Tory at 7:10 if he will clear that, because I'm planning on buttoning my shirt sometime this year. We're going to take the break. We're going to come back. John Tory joins us at 7:10 this morning, the mayor of Toronto. 8 o'clock, it's Brian Burke, the NHL on Sportsnet. We'll get his view on the hubs. And, of course, Brian will have an opinion on just about anything. And Buck Martinez, the voice of the Blue Jays, joins us at 8:30. It is leadoff with Vendetta and Russick. It's Wednesday, July the 8th. We are going to have some showers today. It looks like 30% chance of showers, a high of 33. That'll break tonight, 21 degrees, and then tomorrow, nothing but sunshines. We'll take the break and come back with the Whitefoot Report featuring George, talking about why a certain quarterback never got the type of deal that Patrick Mahomes signed in the last couple of days. When we return on Leadoff on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It is 6:34. It's Joey Vendetta along with George Russick here on Leadoff on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's a Wednesday, hump day, July the 8th. You can text us at 590-590 or call us 416-870-0590. 1-888-666-0590 or star 590 on your Rogers cell phone. And we are asking, what's your go-to can't-live-without cereal? We started the discussion this morning. I went off on a tangent about the chocolate chip cookies mixed in a giant bowl, generally used for salad. You basically take the whole box of chocolate chips and empty them out into the bowl, and then slowly pour your beverage of choice, generally milk, over the cookies, and then mix them kind of like a cement mixer into a paste that you could use generally to eat, but, you know, much like Flex Seal, if you need to seal anything, it actually has a multi-purpose use. You can use it to patch holes in walls. You can use it to seal if your boat's leaking, if your RV's leaking. The best.
That
are you kidding me,
tape?
Phil Swift?
What about the piece of tape? If your pool liner's ripped, just put a piece of tape on it. It's fine.
Dude.
It's fixed.
Phil Swift, you want to talk about a guy that's eaten some cereal? And I think I can't button my shirt. Philly Swift, that dude, he's wearing a caftan. He's wearing a
Wait,
giant.
Did something happen to him?
No. You're talking about the other guy. The guy died. The other guy with the mustache and the beard. I can't remember his name right now. What the hell was that guy's name? He was on the NHL Network all the time before they took the NHL Network away in Canada. You used to be able to see this guy. He was on every commercial.
Did he host the NHL Awards at one point?
He was based in Tampa. No, I think he came in and he applied Flex Seal to the NHL Awards so no one could talk. Covered everyone's mouth. So, no. What did you call him, Palatian? Billy Mays. No, that doesn't sound right.
No, that
Billy
sounds
Mays,
right.
The OxyClean
right.
guy? Billy Mays?
Billy Mays.
OxyClean. That sounds like something
Billy
that
Mays.
You snort and get addicted to. Oh, yeah, Billy Mays. And it was OxyClean. Poor Billy Mays. He died.
Yeah.
He died in Tampa, Florida in 2009. I wonder if he was in a strip joint at Mons Venus. George, you ever go to Mons Venus in Florida?
I'm glad you mentioned an adult establishment. You've mentioned this specific place in Niagara Falls.
What, the Sundowner?
Yes. And
have you ever gone there?
Apparently, I've heard, there's news. It's opening this weekend with a 4,000 square foot patio.
So wait a second. You go to the Sundowner and you can go outside in the patio. What does that mean in terms of the employees and their various states of disrobing?
I don't know.
George, I'm consumed with the important things in life. And as I said, coming up at 8:30, it's important that you listen to Buck Martinez so we can get a handle on what's going on with the Blue Jays who are training at the Rogers Center. Brian Burke will check in at 8 o'clock to discuss what's going to happen with Toronto as a bubble city and even the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are largely healthy other than Andreas Janssen, who is out for the year, but the rest of the team is pretty much healthy. So it's going to be fun to watch this young Maple Leaf team in this tournament. And John Tory, the mayor of Toronto, will be with us in just over half an hour, and we can get a read on what's going on in this city. If you want to go out and maybe watch sports with your friends and enjoy that in a public place, what are the city's plans to allow people to gather? And I'm not going to say it's going to be a repeat of Jurassic Park, but it's nice. The weather's great. You want to go out. You want to be able to go out with your friends and meet up and watch a Raptors game or a Leaf game. What are the city's plans for that? We'll get into it with the mayor. And we'll get into this Tom Brady thing here in a second, how Brady never got a Mahomes deal, because that's kind of interesting, right? Mahomes is getting a $500 million deal. And look, Brady has certainly made money, but he's always taken, for the most part, deferred money and team-friendly deals so that the Patriots could win a ton of Super Bowls and be in the Super Bowl for what seemed like virtually every year and win their division virtually every year. But, George, I got to ask you about this DeSean Jackson remarks that he made on social media. He apologized for anti-Semitic social media posts and said he would educate himself, and a coalition of Jewish organizations in Philadelphia offered to work with him. And the ADL-AJC, the Jewish Federation of Greater Philadelphia, and the Jewish Federation of Southern New Jersey, the Philadelphia Holocaust Remembrance Foundation, and the Pennsylvania Jewish Coalition strongly condemned wide receiver DeSean Jackson's anti-Semitic social media post promoting notorious anti-Semite Louis Farrakhan, and a quote falsely attributed to Adolf Hitler. Although Mr. Jackson later posted that he has no hate in his heart, his amplification of hate-held messages sent a very different message. And the Eagle organization immediately condemned these things. And you got to remember that Howie Roseman and the owner, Jeffrey Lurie, are both Jewish. So I got to ask you this question. We live in a racially charged environment right now. Everything sets people off instantly. We've seen the protests all over the world, specifically in the U.S. But do you think that DeSean Jackson gets a little bit of a pass here because he's black? Or do you think this is the same response that would have greeted a Jewish player saying something about the black community?
First of all, I don't think it's a good idea ever to quote Adolf Hitler. So full stop on that one by DeSean Jackson. But you know what, Joey? I kind of agree with you that this story wasn't getting the coverage it maybe should have. And hate is hate regardless. We all want to be better when it comes to being racially sensitive and getting rid of racism as a whole in our society. And what DeSean Jackson did was wrong. And I felt like it didn't get the coverage it deserved or should have. And just releasing an apology like that, I don't know. Like he is misinformed. How did he not know, Joey, that would be a bad idea posting? Like he needs to educate
himself. Because he's a wide receiver in the NFL. That's how, right? He says he wants to apologize to Jeffrey Lurie, Howie Roseman, Doug Peterson, the Eagles organization for insensitive and ill-informed posts, right? He posted this on Twitter as well, but I don't understand. Like, think about this, okay? Drew Brees gets death threats, and people demand he retires for saying he stands for the flag with the people who die for it. But DeSean Jackson quotes Hitler, offers a little apology, and everything is okay. Right? I mean, what is this? The classic mix-up? Oh, I mistakenly quoted Hitler and offended the Jewish community. I'm sorry. Why isn't DeSean Jackson called to task? Like, Drew Brees was vilified. They were ready to run Drew Brees out of the planet, never mind the league. And right. DeSean Jackson's going to get basically a pass because he apologized.
It's true, Joey. Standard. You brought up the point that if a Jewish athlete did that, about a black athlete, what would happen? What would that feel like? Torched. Yeah. No,
he'd be
absolutely
done.
And it's a tough situation, and a lot of people, and if you're if you are Jewish and you're very angry about this, you have every right to be angry about this. And yeah, I may be misreading the situation, Joey, but I just don't feel like it's gotten the coverage like it should have. And why doesn't the NFL step in here slap DeSean Jackson with some sort of suspension or fine? They can do whatever they want. It's a private entity. It has its own way of disciplining players. They can do whatever they want. Wouldn't that be a message? The NFL came out, Roger Goodell, saying we need to be more sensitive to the Black Lives Matter movement. We want to be better as a league. What a way to start things off, Joey, if they potentially suspended him for a game or two for this. They can do whatever they want. Roger Goodell is the judge, jury, executioner. He can do whatever he wants when it comes to punishing players. Wouldn't that be a message by the NFL saying we will not tolerate any sort of racially insensitive comments by anybody in our league, regardless of the color of your skin?
Here is the issue, right? Jackson posts a message to his Instagram story that claims to quote Hitler in saying that black people were the real children of Israel and that white Americans would be terrified to know that they've been mistreating and discriminating and lynching them. And the screenshots were published by the Philadelphia Inquirer and some other publications, right? And that passage is often quoted by people who inexplicably argue that Hitler was not a racist, which don't even get me started on that.
Oh my, who's so, arguing that?
There are people who argue that. So,
okay.
If you're in the Jewish community and your family was touched by the Holocaust in some way, and you had relatives who perished in that, in one of the most heinous crimes in the history of humanity, if not the most. And you have the Black community who are rightfully so incensed, upset at the way they've been treated for hundreds of years. The Jewish community's right there with them when it comes to what happened in the Holocaust. And for Deshaun Jackson to post that is mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. Yep. And for Deshaun Jackson to not get the same type of treatment and punishment that people were demanding of Drew Brees, and Roger Goodell being silent on this, the Eagles released a statement, and maybe that's the way they wanted to play it. But if Goodell's going to speak up about Black Lives Matter, he better the hell speak up about this.
I haven't heard anything yet.
Crickets from Teflon Raj, as I like to call him. We're going to take the break. We're going to come back and play the game that is sweeping the continent. We have a $100 gift certificate for Untuck It. And George is talking about buttoning your shirt from the bottom up or the top down. I actually like to button the top button only, which gives me that gang look, you know, that sort of Compton, South L.A. gang look that I like
Bubba
to cultivate.
Watson look? The Bubba Watson look?
Yeah, I get into my 71 El Camino with the hydraulics and just pound some chocolate chip cookies in a bowl as I drive down the road. And so I wear that top down, but George likes to go bottom up. With Untuck It, you have multiple options. And we're going to give you the chance to win $100, actually a $300. I thought we gave away the $200 yesterday, but apparently we have a $300 gift certificate for Untuck It, and we have three questions. And it's all or nothing when we return on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We are back. It is Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Joey Vendetta along with George Russick. It's leadoff. Text us at 590-590. Let us know what your favorite cereal is, what you're addicted to. Doug in Brantford. George, I'm so glad to hear all those poor girls that are trying to pay their way through college may finally get back to work. I may have to go and donate to the Herculean effort. George, of course, talking about the fact that an establishment in Niagara Falls is reopening with the patio. That's not John Tory's jurisdiction, but we may have to ask them about those types of establishments and whether the city of Toronto is sanctioning that kind of activity. No. We know how important it is to the economic development of Toronto.
I'm just passing on information. I don't know why we have to go down these roads. Like, I'm just passing on information.
George, that's what you do. You're an information passer honor, so yeah. I will bestow that title upon you, along with George Whitefoot, the man with the greatest golf ankle tan in modern history.
Joey worked on it yesterday, played 27 yesterday, worked on the golf tan yesterday.
You played 27 holes of golf in that sweltering heat?
Yes.
Did you have someone with a mister driving behind you?
I did take the cart because it was so sweltering hot. So yesterday was after the show, I went and worked out at Oaks Park in Niagara Falls and then took a nap and then played 27 and then went to a patio and had a beer. What a busy day.
You had a full
yesterday.
Day, my man.
Yeah, I know.
You had a full day. You had a
getting
full
after
day.
It.
So, George, I have to ask you a question here. This is completely unrelated to the texts on your favorite cereal, your go-to cereal. And we have a couple of serious questions. We're going to get into the Untuck It here, though, first. And we'll talk about this question that I have for you after 7 o'clock, George. I have a question. It's very important. It's actually related to my health, and I need your opinion on it. But I'm going to hold the question because now it's time to play All or Nothing, and you could win a $300 gift card from our friends at Untuck It. So here's what you need to do. We're going to ask three questions. George is going to go first. And you either need to get them all right or get them all wrong. And, George, this is a momentous occasion. We have a gentleman by the name of Jason in Mississauga on the line. George, take it away with our first question.
Jason, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Are you ready to win?
I'm going to try.
Okay,
Jason,
I like that.
Jason, hold on, George. Jason, I need you to be a lot more pumped up than you are right now, Jason. Are you still asleep?
No, I'm on my way to work.
You're on your way to
work? Did you have cereal this morning, Jason?
Jason, where do you
work? I don't eat cereal anymore.
Jason, George and I are going to ask you questions concurrently so we confuse you, okay? We're going to ask them at the same time.
Okay.
So, Jason,
all right, question one, Jason. Here we go.
Hold on, George. I need to know where Jason works. Jason, where do you work?
I manage an office building.
Oh. What's it like? Do you have to wear a mask?
No, I don't, because we're behind, like, plexiglass in my office, so I'm not in
direct
with the public. So.
George, I'm ratting on. We got John Torrey on at 7 o'clock, Jason. I need your address. I'm sending John over with a mask after
okay.
the show.
Okay.
All right, George, first question.
I'm good.
Okay, perfect. Okay.
I like, Joe, you can sing like a canary. All right, Jason, true or false? The Ryder Cup might be postponed to 2021. The current champions are Team Europe. True or false?
False.
All right, Joey. Jason, sorry. So, Joey, he needs to get the next two wrong to win because the answer
yes.
was true. They
yes.
defeated the U.S. 17.5 to 10.5 in 2018 in France. We all remember that.
I don't, but that's
okay.
fine. All right.
Okay.
Next question. Jason, without the mask, office manager, building manager in Mississauga, wherever the hell you are. All right. Blue Jays schedule was released this week, and their first opponent, the Boston Red Sox. True or false?
True.
You're still alive, my friend. George, next question.
The answer is false. All right. Jason, this is it. This is to win the $300 gift card from Untuck It. True or false? Now that Patrick Mahomes is the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, behind him at number two is Tom Brady. True or false?
False.
Loser, loser, Carlos Boozer. $300 gift card goes up by $100. Tune in tomorrow, and you could be just swimming in Untuck It goods. It's Vendetta. It's Russick.
So
it's Leadoff. We're going to take the break. And, George, we're going to come back with the mayor of Toronto and also your medical advice to me on a very pressing issue when we return on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It is 2 minutes after 7 o'clock. Welcome back. It's Vendetta and Russick. Today, Environment Canada says we're going to get some showers, 30% chance, 21 degrees tonight, 33 today. Tomorrow, nothing but sunshine. Friday, mix of sun and cloud and some showers, around 40% chance. Saturday and Sunday as well. And you know what? The lawn needs it. So if you're a fan of plants and the beautiful blooming of flowers, you'll be okay with this rain. We've had an awesome summer. It's been crazy hot. It's been awesome. And, of course, this morning we're talking about a bunch of things, including the Blue Jays resuming their training camp at the Rogers Centre today. They got to the Rogers Centre a couple of days ago. Adam Silver is concerned about positive tests popping the bubble in Florida. I wouldn't be surprised that the whole thing goes completely sideways. MLS has been forced to change their tournament schedule in the wake of more positive tests. Deshaun Jackson apologizes after anti-Semitic tweets. And the Blackhawks are standing by their name. Of course, the Redskins are going to have to change their name. We discussed this yesterday. But the Blackhawks are standing by their name because they're named after a military regiment and not really racist connotations there. And they've never really been taken to task for it. So we're also asking you what your favorite go-to addictive cereal is. And, George, I got to ask you this question because I got to go for some blood work at Life Labs. And I got to say, the Life Labs experience is generally pretty good. There's not much of a wait time. You can make an appointment. And for a guy that lived in the U.S. for 20 years and people talk about the Canadian healthcare system, you know, having some issues in terms of wait times and not being able to get in to see certain specialists. I got to tell you, whenever I go to Life Labs, it takes like 10 minutes to go get your blood work done. So my kudos to Life Labs. And the question is this, George. They tell you not to eat. Mm-hmm. Like 12 hours before the blood test. Yeah. Does it count if you've taken a ladle full of Nutella and put it on your chocolate chip cookies and mashed the whole thing together at about 11 o'clock at night in a bowl of milk and down that before you went to bed?
I'm not a medical professional in any way, shape, or form, Joey, but I would probably say that's not going to help your glucose level. Oh, my God. Easy for me to say.
Glucose. I loved her. She was a great actress. Glucose. She was awesome.
She was great in Fatal Attraction.
She was so good. Glucose.
She was so good. That boiling rabbit scene, watch out.
The best. I love a good boiled rabbit, especially in that
scene.
There's
another movie we've mentioned that hasn't been made before the year 2000.
We are trying to stick to references here that only apply to people that are 94 years old. So if you're under 94, you won't get any of our movie references. Gone with the Wind is the next one that we'll be referencing. So stay tuned for that.
We Gone with the Wind at the old talkie back in the day,
yeah,
Joey.
Exactly. I want to watch it at the drive-in. We're going to ask John Torrey some questions about drive-ins.
I went to the drive-in on the weekend.
You did? Where?
In Hamilton.
The Sundowner? The Sundowner drive-in?
No, I didn't go there. No, I went to the drive-in.
I'm thinking of going to the Sundowner this weekend just to see the patio and how that works. Because you said the patio's opening, right?
Joey, if you want to meet up for a beverage.
George, if you come and get me and drive me to Niagara Falls, okay. I'll consider it. Okay?
Do we have to wear masks? We have to wear masks in the car and be socially distant.
Bro, you got
to
wear masks everywhere. Okay, John Torrey's wearing a mask right now as he's eating cereal. I'm going to ask John Torrey what his favorite cereal is. But, George, the question, we got a bunch of questions here on the text line at 590-590, and this is an interesting one. Rick from Markham says, Joey, can you give me an over and under on managers getting fired in the shortened MLB season? George, I'll throw that one out to you. What's the over under on managers this season, and is it fair in a 60-game season to blow out your manager? Do you think any managers get canned this year if there is a season?
I think it's really low. I think it's 0.5.
I really don't think any manager gets canned this year unless they do something particularly stupid, racist, make a comment, then all bets are off. But I don't think any managers get canned.
When it comes to now managers in baseball, out of the big four sports, the managers become the least important, right? Because it's all about the analytics department and how they do their lineups and the pitching matchups. It's more about managing people now than it was actually managing the game. And I don't really see a lot of managers especially getting fired because we have a pennant race starting August 1st. 60 games, it's a sprint. Unless these teams get off to a 10, 12, 13-game losing streak, yeah, then maybe a manager gets fired.
Maybe.
But I don't see too many of those getting fired during such a shortened season.
Yeah, I don't really see any. And then another guy sends in a text here at 590-590. Saran from Scarborough talking about the Deshaun Jackson post, the anti-Semitic post that he's apologized for. What Jackson posted on social media was wrong. Let's not forget that Riley Cooper said the N-word. The Eagles didn't punish Riley but gave him a contract extension. It would have been very hypocritical of the Eagles to punish Jackson. I will agree with that to an extent, except for the fact that Riley Cooper, when he committed his transgression, this was years ago, not that long ago, 5-6 years ago, probably something like that. And it was a different environment. If that happened now, they would be, Riley Cooper would have been burned in effigy in Philadelphia. Yeah. So again, not condoning what either of them said, but the reactions are based on the time. And before we get John Torrey on here in a second, I will say this, that look, we have an interesting text here from Thomas G that I want to read real quickly, George. Question, all big three major leagues supposedly restarting around the end of July to finish the 2019-20 season. Normally, this would be the start of the preseason for some leagues for 2021. So what happens because of this overlap to next season schedules, including CBAs, player contracts, possible player fatigue, throw COVID-19 BLM protests into the firestorm, and you have an uncontrolled forest fire season similar to the Southern California last year. Hard to forecast the effects on this pandemic on the future of major league sports. Well, it's a pretty simple answer. Everything gets pushed forward constantly. You're constantly rescheduling. That's what's going on. Everything is in constant reschedule mode. So, and I will use this from my concert experience because my day job's at Live Nation and we haven't done concerts and people want to go to concerts and everything's being rescheduled perpetually, right? So as this thing progresses, you just keep moving everything forward. And if they're saying, hey, it looks like we're going to be doing something in March of 2021, and then you have an explosion in Florida and Arizona, and you know, the cases are going up in California and in Texas, another explosion of cases, then those markets are saying, okay, well, now we're going to push them forward from February to April. It's a constantly evolving situation. And with that, it's our pleasure to welcome John Torrey to the program. John, you're with Joey Vendetta and George Russick. Good morning to you. How are you today?
Joey, I'm fine. A man of you, just a man of unending talents. I mean, back on radio, and I just an executive of renown. I can't believe I'm on the radio with you.
You know what happens, John, is that when you have no wife and no kids and no other responsibilities, you need to fill your time, and this is how I do it, my friend. Thank you for doing this.
I am also the living proof. I am the living proof more so than you that they can teach anybody to do radio.
Hey, I used to listen to you. You were pretty good.
Last thing I ever thought I'd become is a talk show host, and I ended up becoming one, and it was great fun, actually. And so, anyway, here we are. What's up?
John... First, before we get to the serious questions, George and I have been discussing this morning favorite cereals. Does John Torrey have a go-to cereal?
Addicted oh, my God. To like, John. You know, that's a really bad question because I'm going to give you an embarrassing, although truthful answer. I mean, the one I liked the best when I was young and that I would, if somebody put a bowl in front of me, I would eat it. And, of course, most people out there listening nowadays in 2020 would just say, oh, my God, who eats that stuff? I used to just love Lucky Charms because they had those little, tasty marshmallow bits. But today, if I was having a bowl of cereal as a sort of a respectable, you know, careful eating adult, it would be probably Shreddies.
That's a good progression, John. That's what I would expect to hear from a mayor. The Lucky Charms were magically delicious, and now you've gone into the health conscious mode. So I appreciate your answer. Look, you have done. I make no secret of my admiration for John Torrey and the job that he's done as mayor of Toronto. Having lived in Los Angeles, you and I have talked about, you know, that market and the homeless issue there, and Garcetti does a decent job there. It's not an easy task to be mayor of any big city. But the way that you have handled the pandemic and Doug Ford and Ontario and Canada, for that matter, has been exemplary. And sure, there have been a couple of bumps along the way, and that's understandable. But at what point did you know this was serious and really decide to lock things down? How quickly did that happen?
You know, that's a really, really good question, and it has a very interesting answer, I believe, is that I have for a report, there were all these projections floating around in March, mid-March, saying what was going to happen in Ontario. And the numbers, Joey, were incredibly horrifying. I mean, they were projecting at the time, I think, a number of deaths in Ontario of the order of something like 15,000. And so I asked, because there were no Toronto numbers done, for our medical officer of health to take those Ontario numbers and please project as to how much of that would happen inside the city of Toronto, given the dense population and so on. And on a Saturday morning in maybe late-ish March, she gave us a presentation, and it projected that if we did nothing, the minimum number of deaths in the city of Toronto alone would be 4,000. And I was sitting there, I mean, you can imagine, I was just dumbfounded. I mean, the whole notion of 4,000 people in the city of Toronto in a relatively short period of time losing their lives to anything is horrifying. We don't have earthquakes and hurricanes here, thank goodness. And so at that point, my response to that was to ask a whole lot of questions, but then to say, all right, if that is where we're headed, then what do we have to do in order to stop that from happening and minimize that number down? You know, we knew it was not likely we were going to get it down to zero, but what do we do to keep it a lot less than 4,000? And what you saw is the result, where we both shutting things down ourselves and became advocates to the province to close things down. And there'll be people critical of that, but I sort of felt it was better to be criticized for doing too much than for doing too little, especially when lives were at stake.
John, we know that the NHL named Edmonton and Toronto, well, it's not official, but it looks like it'll be Edmonton and Toronto as hub cities for the return to play for the National Hockey League. How closely are you in the city working with MLSE?
we've been working very closely with them. I think one of the things that's even made this a glimmer of possibility, and we keep hoping that it actually will get confirmed, because I've been asked a number of times as if it is confirmed, which it still isn't. But we've been working with the other two governments, the federal and provincial governments. The federal government had to help us, obviously, with the border and quarantine requirements. The province and ourselves work very closely together on all the different orders that apply to people, you know, physically distancing and all this kind of thing. And I think the net result, though, is the hard work has been done by MLSE, who had to develop not only a whole series of exhaustive series of disinfection protocols and so on around all the places where the players and staff and others will be, but also a bubble. They had to design a bubble that could contain not 10 people, but in this case, I haven't even done the numbers, but it's almost hundreds of people between the players, because you've got multiple teams that would come here, the staff. I think there was some talk of even players' families being here. And then you had to work in things like, well, all right, if you had a bubble, which you can do inside a building, what about people wanting to go outside for a walk? You know, literally something as simple as that. And what if there are kids and families that have to, you know, do something sort of a bit recreationally? So everybody's worked hard to develop what I think is a great proposal from Toronto. And we're now just respectfully waiting for the NHL, hopefully, to say yes to us. But I don't have any inside information on that, more so than what you've been reporting about the players and the league.
If you're just joining us, it's Lead Off on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. George Russick along with Joey Vendetta, 7:15 in the morning. And our guest is John Tory, the 65th mayor of the great city of Toronto. And John, we understand, and you were right there last year with the Toronto Raptors front and center supporting this team. There were Jurassic Parks all over the country. And as we get to sports coming back in a meaningful manner where people are going to want to do something socially and gather together. And, you know, we saw what happened in Trinity Bellwoods Park, and that was, and again, that was one of those blips on the radar. Those things are going to happen, and you have to react in real time. But communal experiences are inherent for people. So what is the timeline and game plan for gathering outdoors safely in large groups to watch games, kind of like that Jurassic Park concept for people if they want to do that? Is there a plan?
Well, we've been talking about it because it's a really good question, of course. You know, we had the spectacle going on. It was a positive, wonderful spectacle when the Raptors were not playing inside Scotiabank Arena. Say they were out in Oakland, you know, playing Golden State in the finals. And you had a crowd, a huge crowd out in front of an empty arena. And so why would that not happen when there actually are people inside playing a game, say if it's the Leafs, coming up in this season if we win the you know, one of those hub spots? And why wouldn't there be a big crowd outside even though there's no crowd inside? So we have to deal with that. And look, I'll be honest. I mean, based on everything I've heard from the health people, they're going to say that's a really bad idea. I mean, it's not a bad idea from the standpoint of fans having fun and enjoying the fact the Leafs are playing inside Scotiabank Arena, even though the arena's empty. It's a bad idea from the standpoint of the virus spread. The whole idea here has been to avoid these crowd scenes, whether it's in parks or on beaches or on the transit. And so, you know, we haven't yet, you know, reached any kind of protocol on that, and that would apply, of course, to the Raptors or the Blue Jays or the or the Leafs or Toronto FC for that matter. So we're going to have to because it's a reality that people may say, well, let's just go down to Jurassic Park or let's go down to Maple Leaf Square and cheer on the Leafs, and we'll have to have some kind of protocol. And, you know, it's kind of difficult to come up with something that says, well, let's have a crowd scene in front of Scotiabank Arena and make sure everybody's standing 6 feet apart. I mean, first of all, that's not that much fun. But secondly, it just is, you know, how do you control that? How do you police that? So we'll have to figure that out. And I know we'll have the cooperation of MLSE in that regard, because I know they understand that, you know, one of the things that has been complicating about having sports come back is that you can't have these crowd scenes just now. I mean, it may be better in the fall. I don't know, but you know, it's a complication for us, definitely.
John, when it comes to,
I forgot. By the way, I forgot this, which is that I'm even more worried about the prospect of having a Stanley Cup parade up Bay Street in which there's only one car carrying the trophy and no people watching it.
I hope you have that problem.
I'm an optimist about these things. I think it would be such an irony after 50-plus years that they win the Stanley Cup and we have a parade and nobody can go. But anyway, we'll just postpone the parade to another time and have a dandy parade.
Right. I think a lot of Leaf fans would be okay with that, though, John. If they
I would be. As one long-suffering Leaf fan, but a very loyal fan, I'd be fine with that. If it's a parade with one car, but it's got the Stanley Cup in it, it's okay with me.
I think we'd be okay. We're hearing potentially drive-in concepts for concerts. Is that something we could potentially do sports-wise? And what would the timeline for that look like?
Well, I will just tell you that we've seen some proposals already for drive-in concerts. We are looking at doing it for entertainment of different kinds over the summer as a city, as part of the kind of restarting of the city and reopening of the city. And, you know, it would happen in, say, shopping mall parking lots and so on. And so the answer is, if people want to come forward, and you know what they even have going on right now in the Toronto Star building at the foot of Yonge Street is an art exhibition where you can walk through it. It's a wonderful thing called Immersive Van Gogh. I saw it on opening day, Canada Day, and it's incredible. But you can also drive your car in, so you can have four people there. You put the windows down, and you're in this incredible digital experience. So I think if people have creative proposals, and if they take into account the health requirements, the answer is yes. And why would you not be able to do the same thing for watching a sports event? So it's really a matter of, you know, we're going to put a couple on as a city to help, you know, get the city brought back to life. But if entrepreneurs, whether in the concert business, which Joey knows well, or whether it's in the sports business, want to do something like that, you know, we're certainly not averse to it at all. We want people to have fun. We want them to enjoy the summer, notwithstanding the extraordinary circumstances.
So John, stage three seems imminent, right? And I understand that you guys have done, again, such a great job in communicating, because I will say that all the signs and all the collateral that the city has put together, that's a yeoman's effort to put that kind of a program together, to warn people to physically distance, to wear masks and do all the things that have kept our cases low in Canada, and specifically in Southern Ontario in this case, and Toronto, talking to you. Can we expect the ability to have gatherings? And look, you know, I'm in the concert business. I work for Live Nation. So we have Budweiser Stage, for example, and we've been doing these virtual shows that air on City TV, you know, with our partners here at Rogers. Mm-hmm. And my question is this: if you're able to do a concert in or watching a Leaf game or a Raptor game in cars, is there the potential for smaller capacity shows in a venue that holds 17,000 people, and you put a screen up and people come in groups and everyone is wearing a mask? I get you. Listen, we all have to wear masks when we're indoors and we can't physically distance. But whether it's the Budweiser Stage in a capacity of 17,000 cut down to 3,000 or 4,000, or the Danforth Music Hall, which holds over 1,000 people, and that's cut down to 300. Is that something that the city is open to? Because people, they want to gather, they want to go out, they want to be together, but we know that it's a really difficult balance for you.
So I think that's going to be the toughest part of phase three. I mean, what phase three involves, so that people know, because a lot of things they would know are open now, but it involves the reopening of indoor dining, but subject to physical distancing requirements. It involves things like recreational facilities being open, indoor pools, gym clubs, you know, fitness clubs, but they will be subject to restrictions. But the toughest part of phase three will be to define what happens vis-a-vis larger crowd gatherings. And I think you've seen signals from the premier and from me that may be a while yet. But look, again, I think the creativity of the private sector in finding ways where you can genuinely keep people safe and have, you know, for example, the film festival is in the midst of describing to us ways in which they think they can use some of the larger venues for a few screenings where you have like every third seat is occupied. And then you have to go through meticulous arrangements to make sure what you don't have, even if it's every third seat inside the theater, is some kind of mob scene outside the theater, because it's those mob scenes, if I can use that expression, that crowd scene, that is where the virus can spread. It's not going to spread if you're every third seat apart in a theater, but how about getting into the theater? How about getting out of the theater? How about the lineup? How about the refreshment stand? And these are the kinds of things that we're going to have to work out, all of us together with the private sector, meaning governments and the private sector. And I think we can in some instances, and it does depend in part on the venue. Is there a place where you can have the lineup of people going in physically distanced, as opposed to some places that have very little in the way of space going into the theater? So I can't say no to that, but we've repeatedly signaled that we think those kinds of crowd scenes that are involved with theaters and concert venues and so on are the ones that will be the toughest and may take the longest to sort out, because they're crowd scenes and because people like to be together. So it's not impossible, but it's a challenge for us all, and for including the people that want to put these concerts on and put on, you know, for that matter, movies in theaters.
John, a lot of our listeners play recreational sports, be it softball, soccer, or they have children who play in those sports as well. And we know the hockey season was shut down, and potentially tryouts, and that hockey's not too far away. Where are we when it comes to phase three, that potentially these sports can return and people are allowed to play them in the city of Toronto?
Well, I think you've seen with the gradual relaxation of the requirements that we now have, you know, day camps open. That includes like some baseball camps and so on. We've now reopened all the city's playing fields, but we said as yet you can only sort of have practices and scrimmages, but there's a limitation on the number of people and so on. I think if things keep going in the right direction, and that involves the people listening on, on the Fan 590 to Sportsnet Radio to wear the masks and to keep their distance. And if they keep doing that, the numbers will keep getting better and we will be able to continue to relax those requirements such that you'll be able to have a baseball game on the playing fields, not just a practice. And you'll be able to get the hockey leagues going, which I know will happen in earnest in the fall. So the good news is the hockey season for minor and amateur hockey is still some distance away. And hopefully the numbers have improved enough that we can, you know, say that's okay. And it's strictly based on health considerations. We're not trying to be killjoys or people who are trying to shut down hockey leagues for kids. We're just trying to make sure that we don't have a recurrence of this virus in a significant way, in the fall or any other time. So I think there's a good prospect that a lot of those rules will be further relaxed by the time we get to the fall, and perhaps even before that, because you've seen they've gone from a total shutdown to now being partially open to the stage where they're kind of more fully open. And I think we're heading in the right direction. We just got to keep it going.
If you're just joining us, our guest is the Mayor of Toronto, John Tory. John, last question before we let you go. And again, we appreciate your time this morning. Florida, California, Texas, Arizona, all seeing a very disturbing explosion in cases. It was the 4th of July weekend in the U.S., and sometimes things are pretty obvious. And in my mind, I was, okay, this is going to be bad for the U.S. because, as we know, Canada and the U.S. are different on many levels, specifically when it comes to politics. This issue has not been political for the most part at all in Canada. This has just been, let's do the right thing. Whereas in the U.S., it's about my God-given right to not wear a mask and my God-given right to go out and celebrate. And we've seen what the consequences are. How closely, this is kind of a two-part question, how closely have you and various levels of government that you're working with monitored the situation in the United States? And how much does that impact your decision in terms of using that as almost, I won't say a template, but as kind of a warning sign that if you don't do what you're discussing, we could end up in the same spot?
It's a really good question. Again, I mean, we have looked internationally at a lot of countries because, of course, Europe and parts of Asia went through the kind of peak of this pandemic before we did. So we were able to see as they came out of it, what did they do in terms of how quickly they opened or how quickly they didn't open? What did they do about face coverings and all these kinds of things? And we've also had a chance to watch the U.S. where there was huge political, and you're right, it was political pressure that was on to reopen everything very quickly. And so it's definitely factored into our thinking. And I can tell you that our health people talk to people in the U.S., so it isn't just us watching TV. I mean, what you see on TV obviously is very disconcerting, to say the least. But they also talk to people, and I think that we've been guided to some extent by the experiences in other countries, as well we should be. And, you know, we watch very carefully so that in the aftermath of a Canada Day or a really hot weekend that we had where the beaches were crowded, do we see a spike up in the cases? Because you have to watch carefully for that. So far, so good. But I just think we've learned lessons from what we've seen elsewhere, including in the U.S. And you're right. The other thing that's happened here, thank goodness, and it's generally the way we do things, is we have not seen the issue become politicized. A little tiny demonstration here or there about face coverings, but really it's a, you know, sort of ragtag group of small group of people. And I think most people accept these things as being in their own best interest and the best interest of their neighbors and friends to keep everybody healthy and to stop a second wave from getting any bigger than necessary if there is one. So, you know, here it's been different. I don't want to say better because I'm not trying to make judgments on Americans, but I think we've handled it well here. And I think that's what's allowed us, for example, to be considered as an NHL hub city, because people look at the pandemic, they look at the way in which government has worked well with each other and worked well with people like MLSE and say, okay, that's the kind of place we should be, above and beyond Toronto being the hockey capital of the world. They're also just saying it's a place where they've got things reasonably under control and can manage it well and appropriately. And I think that's what they would count on if anything happened during the course of the hockey games. That's if we're lucky enough to get them here.
John, again, you guys have done such a good job. Keep up the good work. And last thing before we let you go, what's your message to the people of Toronto right now and going forward? I know you don't have a crystal ball. You don't know what's going to happen. We don't know when there's going to be a vaccine. But, you know, what's your kind of short-term and medium-term message to the people of Toronto?
keep doing what you've been doing. People have been fantastic, and they have cooperated, and they haven't stood up and sort of said, it's my God-given right to do this or that. They've been mindful and respectful of the health advice, and they're excited, as I am, about things happening, like hockey league starting up, and like the Leafs playing, and like music concerts starting up again, but they understand that it has to happen in a gradual way, a measured way, and they've been very respectful of that, and thank goodness, because it's involved huge sacrifices for people, including people losing their jobs and all kinds of things. So hang in there. Brighter days are here, and more brighter, you know, even brighter days are ahead, because things are getting better and better, but we just have to hang in there.
John, thanks again for doing this. Take care of yourself,
okay,
and my best
to
you and your family, okay?
You too, everybody. All of you too. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye now.
That is John Tory, the mayor of Toronto. And George, as you heard, Canada deserves credit. And as much as we at times are very highly critical of various levels of government, and John didn't compare Toronto to American cities, but you saw what happened in New York, and the governor there took charge, and New York is in a much better place than it was, but it was in a pretty bad spot. And I understand that in Toronto, there are certain hospitals in Toronto that are overrun with people, and it's not just COVID. They're just people that are clogging the arteries of the system, but there are also hospitals that are empty. And as we see this resurgence in the United States, and you're hearing these horror stories of hospital beds and intensive care units filling up really quickly, we're pretty fortunate, George, that we haven't really had to deal with that here in Toronto.
Yeah, and again, it just goes back to everybody just being, you know, smart about things and being vigilant. And it was tough being in quarantine. It still is being in quarantine and being apart from friends and family. But as John said, if we just stay strong and stay smart about this, we'll get back to some sort of normal quicker than what they're doing in the United States. And I think we've been pretty good with how we've taken our time opening things and been very meticulous. It's just, I hope we continue to be on this track. And as you mentioned, Canada is doing a fantastic job. We have flattened the curve, and you just hope it continues to be that way throughout the summer.
We're going to take the break. It's Vendetta and Russick on Leadoff. We'll come back and we will get into it on why a certain quarterback didn't get paid like a guy did just the other day. And we'll touch upon more Blue Jays info and talk about Hub Cities. Our guests coming up, we still have Brian Burke as well as Buck Martinez before 9 o'clock. Make sure you stay with us here on Leadoff with Vendetta and Russick on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It is 7:36. My name is Joey Vendetta. Excellent to have you along this morning here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Leadoff. And our thanks to the mayor of Toronto, John Tory, for joining myself and George Russick. And of course, we're asking you, what is your go-to cereal? Now, the mayor had an interesting answer.
Yeah.
His was when he was a kid, he had Lucky Charms, which of course are magically delicious. It's probably how he became mayor. He ate Lucky Charms. They're magic, and magically he became the mayor of Toronto. And then he went with the, what was it, not Mueslix.
Shreddies.
It was Shreddies, yeah. So he went healthy.
Mueslix.
Mueslix. The Mueslix, the worst. It's like eating, it's like going to a roadhouse and sweeping the floor and then putting it in a bowl, adding milk to it.
Is Patrick Swayze the bouncer?
Yeah, Patrick Swayze's the, God rest Patrick Swayze's soul. Another movie, yes. Of course, that is 100 years old. So if you're
Roadhouse.
70 or if you're 70 or over, you get the reference to Roadhouse. We got a good text at 590-590. Joe in Vaughan, Ontario. He says social tea biscuits were a close second to this monster Mount Rushmore favorite of breakfast cereal, cookies, whatever it is you're into and putting in the bowl and mixing up. George, this guy went off the board. But this might be the heavyweight champ right now. You ready for this?
Yep.
Milano Ladyfingers. You ever had those?
Of course. You see,
those things,
I know,
in a bowl, stirred up with the proper technique, create a porridge that you could actually use to plug a dike in a situation where water may be leaking. Much better than Flex Seal. tastier than Flex Seal. That's for sure.
I do like the Ladyfinger, but I prefer the S cookie over the Ladyfinger. And dunking the S cookie in milk was a go-to when I was a kid.
Oh, the S cookie, George. You finally hit it. We finally made it to that place of true bliss and zen. The S cookie.
Yes.
I just flash back to when I was 6 years old and had my first, I don't even know if it's a box. It was in a plastic, terrible plastic container, but I ripped that puppy open hard, the S cookie. So the S cookie and the Biscotti Milano Ladyfingers right now are in the lead. So I'd like to hear from you. Text us at 590-590. What's your go-to? It started off as breakfast cereal, but then, of course, I went with the Chips Ahoy chocolate chip cookies and emptying the whole box or container into a giant salad bowl and then throwing milk in there and mixing it all up into a porridge, which you could actually reuse to finish your driveway as well, along with patching various things in your house. But getting to the stories this morning from a sporting perspective, we have the Toronto Blue Jays, of course, resuming training camp at Rogers Centre yesterday, and today they're back at it, and there's still some guys in Florida and Dunedin. We don't really know who's still in Dunedin, but they had one positive test. Adam Silver is concerned that the NBA bubble may pop in Florida, and there is a good chance of that. MLS has already had to deal with it. The Dallas team had a bunch of players testing positive before they even got to Florida. They're out of this tournament. And you've got, I believe, Vancouver's got 5 players that have tested positive. So Florida, not the ideal place to go if you want to sequester and quarantine, because the cases in Florida have exploded. And as John Tory said, and we had John on about 10 minutes ago, the mayor of Toronto, we have had a very measured and calculated response to the coronavirus. We understood it early on that it was a big threat to the frontline workers in terms of them having to deal with this. We forget about yourself for a minute here, right? If you go out, and I wear a mask when I go into a store, George, I imagine that you do as well. When you go into close proximity with others, you wear a mask. But if we keep going the way we're going in Southern Ontario, Toronto specifically, in the GTA, we're going to get to a better place and be able to do more things. And yes, the temptation is to go out and gather and be with your friends. And people have been isolated, and it's been very difficult. And that's why I think Toronto being chosen as a hub city, and Edmonton as well, for the people of Edmonton and for Canada in general. This is it's a great thing to have happen, because it shows you that we are getting back to places we need to get to, okay? And I think it's important to have those positive benchmarks, those positive developments, because otherwise you're going to look at what's happening in these states in the U.S. and it's just, wait a second, I just quarantined for 2 months and now I got to do it again? And George, we definitely don't want that.
No, we don't, Joey. But again, you're right. We're all heading in the right direction. And it is, you know, encouraging. But to me, living in a border town, Joey, I'm kind of nervous if and when the border does reopen, right? And if
it's gonna
we're allowed
be a
minute. That people from the United States, which we know is the hotspot of the coronavirus on the planet right now, it makes me nervous. And it's great that we've done a great job as a country in flattening the curve. But if we allow people from around the world, and more specifically down south, to come into our country, there's a more chance of transmission of the virus and a kind of a relapse. That's the one thing I'm worried about, Joey. Where does it get to a point where the government continues to keep the border closed? Or do you think that's a long-term option?
I think the border being closed, and look, the Toronto Blue Jays are in a very tough situation, because it's not even confirmed that they're going to play at the Rogers Centre. They're at the Rogers Centre for this training camp. It's not spring training anymore, because it's not spring, but we'll call it summer camp for want of a better term. The Blue Jays are in a spot where they have to figure out if the Rogers Centre is going to be the place they play. Major League Baseball announced their schedule yesterday, and the Blue Jays will open their 2020 season in Florida, of all places. So high-risk travel situation for the Blue Jays. So the Blue Jays go to Florida, and who knows what happens when they're there. Yes, the players are going to have to stay in the bubble, quote-unquote, but really you're dealing with some pretty young kids who want to have a good time. There's going to be temptation to break every quarantine rule that there is. And the Jays have to figure out how they're going to manage that. And then when they come back to Toronto to play at the Rogers Center, if that is indeed the case, because Buffalo is still an option because there's no fans, so it doesn't really matter. But that's a huge consideration because the Blue Jays are the only team outside of TFC and the Raptors. Now they're going to the States to stay. The Blue Jays are the only team that are going to have cross-border travel. And that is a huge consideration. So the opening day, a Friday, is supposed to you know, kicks off a three-game series against Tampa, and then the Jays face the Nationals for a split four-game series, and the clubs are going to play a pair in Washington before they're supposed to move to Toronto. Well, that might not even happen. I mean, again, things are developing so quickly. It changes from day to day, and it's a very difficult situation to manage, George. But getting back to what you said about living in a border town, I think the key for you is that you live perilously close to the Sundowner, and their patio is opening. So
this weekend.
You don't want the border opening, George, because you want that patio all to yourself, my man.
Well, 4,000 square feet patio opening at the Sundowner this weekend. And yeah, Joey, it makes me nervous. Being so close to this tourist area and so many Americans here, and I'm not going to lie, I do visit the United States a lot. I go at least probably once a month to do some shopping and just go over. I do miss doing that, but I have no plans of going to the United States once we're allowed to do the cross-border thing again. I have no plans to go in the United States anytime soon, just based on, you know, the amount of infections down south. And again, it just makes me nervous. And you said it, the Blue Jays are going to be traveling all around the United States, then coming back here. It's just, it's not a bubble situation. And kudos to the NHL again. And this is what we've been talking about the last couple of days. And it's not officially official yet, but it looks like Toronto and Edmonton will be the hub cities. And good on the NHL for being smart enough to, you know, keep this in Canada and try to keep this under control for the most part. And you mentioned this to kick off the show. If Adam Silver had the chance to do it all over again, would he pick Orlando as the hub city? Maybe not.
No.
Right?
No. He wouldn't pick Orlando as the hub city. You know what? He might have considered Canada. He might have legitimately considered Canada, and rightfully so. And the same with MLS. I'm not saying they're kicking themselves for picking Florida, but guys, if you're going to make a bet, that was a really bad bet. We're going to take the break. It's 7:46. It's Vendetta and Russick on Leadoff. Still to come, we have Buck Martinez, the voice of the Blue Jays, at 8:30. We'll get his insight into the summer camp that's going on at the Rogers Center. And we're going to get to Brian Burke at 8 o'clock and find out what he thinks about the Leafs' chances to advance in this tournament, and also want to hear what he thinks about the Bubble City concept and what the threats are and how likely it is the NHL finishes their season. We're going to come back. We're going to take the break and give you some information on some incredible events that occurred during this time when things were, well, sort of normal. When we return on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Nine minutes in front of 8 o'clock. It is July the 8th. Fantastic weather for the most part. We're going to get a shower. Perhaps today. We need it. My lawn is looking like Eminem's head during the blonde phase era.
Right.
And that's because I put way too much fertilizer on it. I don't know how to fertilize well.
Now,
the only thing I know to do,
Joey,
is take cookies.
Your Twitter profile pic has you with a deliciously luscious head of hair.
I had some good salad going on back in the day. My Twitter profile pic, Radio Vendetta, has me with David Bowie. And David Bowie is pointing. And it looks like he's pointing to the future. Because David Bowie was that kind of guy. He was a future.
Your salad is incredible there. I just have to ask you, have you ever dyed your hair?
Well, I don't. What? No. I never. I think I may have dyed it once when I was like 19. I was in an Ozzy Osbourne tribute band, and we played the Gasworks, this club in Toronto. Again, another reference. If you're under 100, you probably don't remember the Gasworks, but it was sort of featured in Wayne's World. And I imagine many of you have seen Wayne's World. And that was where Mike Myers stole the name of the club. And we played the Gasworks the night I was 19. Ozzy Osbourne played Maple Leaf Gardens, and you got into the Gasworks with your ticket stub for just $2. And so I was in an Ozzy Osbourne tribute band, and I was Ozzy. And the guys in the band were torturing me that my hair was black and I needed to look like Ozzy, who at the time had bleach blonde hair. So I think I dyed it, like, very short term. And we played this show upstairs at the Gasworks. And after the Ozzy concert, Ozzy came to the Gasworks. But this club had an upstairs and a downstairs. And we played upstairs. And his guitar player, a guy by the name of Jake E. Lee, and the drummer named Randy Castillo, who, God rest his soul, passed away from cancer. And then a bass player named Phil Susan, who also played with Jimmy Page at one point. They came upstairs to watch us. And the place was packed because it was, you know, the Ozzy concert had just gotten out, and Maple Leaf Gardens being on Carlton Street, this venue, the Gasworks, was just maybe a half a mile or a mile down the street, and people walked down. And Ozzy was downstairs, and he was so annihilated that he couldn't even make it up the stairs. So he didn't see us. And this, I don't know if you remember the band Skid Row, George, the heavy metal band Skid Row.
Sebastian Bach from Kitchener.
Yeah, well, Sebastian Bach is a Toronto guy, and I knew Sebastian. We used to rehearse in the same place. And so Sebastian's band was playing downstairs. So Ozzy was watching Sebastian's band, and they were called Kid Wicked, or it might have been VO5. They were named after the Hairspray, I think. It was one of those bands. But we were upstairs, and the place was packed, and guys were smashed. And back then at the Gasworks, you know, they used to serve these giant beer bottles. I don't think they make them anymore, but they were like 1 liter glass bottles, which might have been the most dangerous thing ever. Do you remember those things, the giant beer bottles? Okay, so they don't make those anymore for safety reasons, probably. And dudes were like smashing bottles, and we're playing, you know, Bark at the Moon, and we're playing Black Sabbath songs. And then after the show, Ozzy's band stuck around to say hi to my band. And they talked to the guitar player and the bass player and the drummer. We were called Little Dolls. And they said, guys, we're so glad Ozzy was too drunk to make it up the stairs to see you guys. And I said to Jakey Lee, why? He said, because your band's really good and probably works way cheaper than we do. And he might have hired you guys to replace us. So we're really happy he didn't make it up the stairs. But that was a night to remember, my friend. So to answer your question, I think I did dye my hair to play that one gig at the Gasworks when Ozzy Osbourne was stumble drunk downstairs and didn't make it up to see us. So there you go.
Real quick, Sebastian Bach from Peterborough. I don't want people to tweet me, but I don't think a lot of people care. Number two, that's awesome that you were the lead singer of an Ozzy Osbourne tribute band. What was the one Ozzy song, and I know we got to go, that you really belted out?
War Pigs. I know it wasn't an Ozzy song proper, as Black Sabbath, but we absolutely crushed War Pigs. Just a great song to do. And you know who Sebastian Bach's brother is? Do you know this? Well, this is a good trivia question.
No, I don't.
Zach Bierk, who played goalie for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Backup goalie.
Oh, wow.
Because Sebastian Bach's real name is Sebastian Bierk, and his sister was a supermodel as well. So a very talented family. We're going to take the break. We're going to come back with a gentleman who is incredibly talented and has done pretty much every job that you can do when it comes to pro hockey. When we come back on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Minutes after 8 o'clock, it is Joey Vendetta along with George Russick. This is Leadoff on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. A lovely day for the most part. May get some showers today. High of around 33. Tomorrow, 34 and sunny. And then we're going to get some much-needed rain on the weekend, especially for my plants and my yard, which I've over-fertilized. The thing's burnt. It looks like Eminem's head or Ricky Schroeder's head after they dyed their hair. We're joined now by a gentleman who has done pretty much everything. He's won the Stanley Cup. He's been a general manager. And he's also done security for the Rolling Stones, believe it or not. We're joined on the show now by our friend Brian Burke. Brian, thanks for doing this. How are you this morning?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Of course, it's always a pleasure. Burke, you want to tell the Rolling Stones security story real quick before we talk hockey?
Yeah, so there was a guy named Billy Sims. I went to high school with him, played football with him. And he was a tight end at the University of Minnesota, played football there. And his dad owned the biggest security company in the Twin Cities. And he called me up and said, do you have summer hockey on Thursday night? And I said, no. He said, do you want to work security at a Stones concert? So I was waiting about 2:15 then. And they told us to wear a tight white T-shirt and blue jeans. So we'd look as big as we could. I got there, and I was the smallest guy there by a mile. They were all like 240, 250. So they made me work the stage door, and I got to meet them all. I got to meet all the Stones. I talked to Charlie Watts for about half an hour.
And what was that like back then? You were a young guy.
Yeah, I was 20. I was 19 or 20. It was 1975, I'm pretty sure. So summer hockey was a really big deal. All the top players from Minnesota, no matter where they went to school, came back and played in this one league. It was a great league. And I was really happy I didn't have a game that night because I would not have missed a game to work this concert. But they were all nice. Keith Richards, Mick Jagger were very cordial. They were pretty messed up, so they didn't really talk to me much. But they were polite. They were like, hey, nice to meet you. Thanks for helping us out tonight. But they were I don't know what they were doing in the room there, but they were doing something that wasn't good for them.
So Brian, speaking of in the room, and we had John Torrey on earlier, and we're talking about Edmonton and Toronto, which have not been officially confirmed as bubble cities, and I have to say that I have a lot of respect for the way the NHL has handled this, because look, I understand that if you're the NBA or you're MLS, that planning, and you're an expert in planning because you've had to do it over the course of your career in running franchises, and I understand that it's constantly shifting and things change. But man, if MLS and the NBA could have a do-over, boy, would they want one right now based on what's going on in Florida. And the NHL, they waited and waited and waited, and it looked like it was going to be Vegas, and then Vancouver bowed out, and then there was talk about Chicago. You have to give the NHL props for waiting this long and finally settling on Canada.
Well, I think you got to give them props for lots of things. I think the very fact of, you know, when this all happened, I predicted we would not be able to finish the season, and I was right. We weren't. But the NHL is smarter than I am, and they said, well, no, we'll just build a little runway out. We don't have to finish in June. So the very fact that they didn't just cancel the season like some other sports did, they said, no, we're going to wait and see what happens. And then waiting to name the hub cities, getting the CBA done as part of it. It's been masterful. Listen, right now the sport needs some good news, and they're providing that good news.
Brian, how huge is it that the return-to-play protocol thing was done, and obviously setting all this up in the hub cities? But in all of that, they also hammered out a CBA. Do people realize how incredibly difficult that is on top of dealing with a pandemic?
Well, I think, no, they don't. The short answer to your question is no, they have no idea. I mean, the detail that's involved in a CBA, you know, basically what you do is use the old one as a template, but then you got to update and modify all the terms in it and add new language and new terms to comprehend what they're going through now. So what they've done, it appears to me, is really creative and really, both sides deserve a lot of credit. The numbers don't work for me. When I look at this, I look at a flat cap for 2 years. I mean, it's really a 30% wage cut this year. So they're going to defer 10%. Escrow's capped at 20%. Trust me, folks, escrow is going to be closer to 40%. That 20% is gone. So they're taking a 30% pay cut. They should get some of it back. But a flat cap in year two, the revenues are not going to be able to sustain a cap of $81 million. So it looks like the owners are saying, look, we'll carry you guys for the first year and a half, 2 years, and then the new U.S. TV deal should kick in, and with luck, we have a vaccine, and we can get back to a revenue base that makes sense. So they've got the Seattle expansion money coming in. That helps the owners carry the load here, but it looks to me like a really creative solution, and I hope it works. The numbers are daunting here.
So, Brian, I had Michael Eisner on my Saturday show a few weeks ago, and we were talking about sports rights fees, and he's the guy who bought ESPN when he ran Disney and oversaw a bunch of gargantuan billion-dollar sports rights fees deals. And we've seen DAZN come in and overpay for rights because they were highly capitalized. What's your take? We know that Bettman, and I'm not going to say he misplayed it, but had he waited a little bit longer, the NHL would have gotten a much more lucrative television deal. It probably would have been a year or two down the road, but they definitely didn't get the money that was there by signing that 12-year deal. You have to really gamble here, and you have to gamble and kind of use your crystal ball. But what does it look like in the future for the NHL as far as a TV deal in your mind? Is it going to go up? We know it's going to be more than what they got. I get that. But how much more is it going to be, Brian? What do you think it's going to look like, and how long do you think that deal will be?
Well, I have no idea. I think the big sports properties are going to continue to get paid. I think Major League Baseball, NHL, NBA, and NFL will continue. And the NFL, obviously, is a big dog. And NASCAR, I think those big properties, the five big properties, will continue to get paid. People, I think now, especially where people will be reluctant to go to sporting events live, I think ratings are going to actually improve. So I think there's money there. I think Gary's really adept at doing these deals. You're right. He might have jumped too soon on the last deal. But I can tell you at the time, everyone in hockey thought it was fantastic. Remember the reaction? Everyone was like, man, this is a great deal. Term and money, it was great. So I trust Gary, and I trust that my guess is he's already had these discussions, or he couldn't have done this CBA. He's got some idea where it's going to be, or he couldn't have done the CBA, because frankly, the numbers don't work. Unless the TV deal comes in at a big increase, these numbers don't work. And I could see the cap being flat at 81 for 5 years, not 2 years. I don't think the revenue side of our business is going to improve anytime fast.
Brian, when it comes to the salary cap, two-part question. You mentioned Seattle coming in. What does that mean for player movement if a lot of teams want to unload some contracts, and potentially Seattle could be that team? And no conditional picks for signing a player that the team was traded to. Is that going to kind of slow down player movement?
Well, Ronnie Francis has a great opportunity here. I think what George McPhee did is he ruined the expansion market by being so shrewd that teams are not going to make deals to keep certain guys. Now they're going to say, "Here's my list. Take whomever you want," because some really tragic mistakes were made last time, where teams gave up top young players to protect other ones, and it was a horrible mistake. A couple of them. So I think he's trashed that market for Ronnie Francis. But what Ronnie's going to have is cap space, and that's going to carry a premium. And he should be able to drive some really creative deals with using his cap space. I think you'll see some buyouts that didn't make sense in the old system. So if you buy out a guy and you get, you know, $500,000 of cap room in relief, in the old days, even 18 months ago, we would have said, well, we're not doing that. It's not a good use of $4 million to free up less than $1 million of cap space. You're going to see that buyout now, I think, more often, just because people will need that small sliver of space. I think you'll see an offer sheet or two for sure. There are teams that are in desperate straits that won't be able to match an offer sheet. So I think it is going to be interesting, and it's all going to be financially driven. And right now, if you've got cap space, you are the man in the room.
We know how much you love those offer sheets, Brian. So I look forward to hopefully seeing one of those in the near future.
You know what set me off about the one to Dustin Penner? One was that I was mad that Kevin didn't call me personally.
And it was
but
funny.
The other was
I had him on the air with me. I should have asked him. I didn't ask him. I had him on the air on Saturday because of the Hall of Fame, and I didn't ask him about it. But yeah, go ahead.
But what made me sour is I had Ryan Getzlaf and Corey Perry up the next summer. And Dustin Penner was a useful part of our team. He's a really gifted athlete for a guy his size. But we had a lot of nights where we couldn't find him. And so to me, it was like, Jesus Murphy, if they're going to pay Dustin Penner that kind of dough, what am I going to have to pay Getzlaf and Perry? That's what really set me off. That's what set off most guys around the league. They thought it was an overpayment.
Hey, and look, at the time, it was understandable, especially because Getzlaff and Perry were so good. And I remember coming to Anaheim because I lived in California at that time and seeing you guys win that cup. And it was, I won't say largely, but you were very shrewd in assembling that team because you paid the guys you had to pay. And Getzlaff and Perry way outperformed what you were paying them at that time because they were on, you know, early in their career deals, right? Which is,
yeah, they were entry level.
Yeah, so that's the thing that people I don't think understand. When you're assembling a team, you have to have guys that are on those entry level or, you know, friendly team deals outperform what they're getting paid. And I want to turn our attention, speaking of which, to the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I want to get your take on what you think the Leafs' chances are going into this tournament. They're largely healthy outside of Andreas Johnsson, who's out for the year. And I don't think we've seen a fully healthy Toronto Maple Leaf lineup in a long time. What do you think the chances are they're going to be playing Columbus, a team that they should beat, but we know that should and could and would are very different things. What do you think the Leafs need to do to first beat Columbus and then advance to the finals? Because it's going to be weird jumping back in real quick, and they got young guys, and I think that favors them, and Freddie Anderson is well-rested.
Yeah, everyone's well-rested. Everyone's healthy, yeah. Other than Josh Anderson. They're facing a healthy Columbus lineup that lost 400 man games due to injured players and star players, too. These weren't Brian Burke-type players. They were good players who were hurt. So, if anything, getting healthy favors Columbus way more than Toronto, in my view. I think, you know, it's interesting. Well, I think it's interesting. I shouldn't presume that the audience does. I would give the edge in goaltending to Freddie. I think Freddie Anderson's had a good year. I think he was 5-1-1 before the pause. But the analytics guys were killing Freddie. I was looking through some stuff saying that he had an average year and everything. I'm like, geez, I thought he was pretty good. Here's what I think it comes down to. I think it's skill versus will. And I talked to we previewed this series on Hockey Central the other day. I talked to five executives the night before, and they all said Toronto should win, but torts. The John Tortorella factor and the way they dismantled Tampa Bay last year, absolutely beat the snot out of them, left them lying on the side of the road, not knowing what hit them. Like that's how they can play: two man forecheck, roll four lines, be physical, be obnoxious. This is going to be a real test for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Now they should win; they have a better team, and they're well coached too. Like when you say, oh, Torts is a great playoff coach, not distant Sheldon Keefe, but he hasn't been there. This is new to him. So they should win, but.
Brian, exactly. You talk about Freddie Anderson, and clearly he needs to win a playoff series for the Leafs. This fan base hasn't seen a win in 16 years. If Freddie Anderson gets hot and he's terrific and the Leafs have a deep run in the playoffs, will that influence what they do with his contract, which expires after next season?
Yeah, well, this whole team is the barometer for this whole team is coming up. Like I said this back in October, the report card for the Toronto Maple Leafs will be written in April and May. So I said back in October when I thought we'd actually play playoff hockey in April and May. Until they have some playoff, and this includes going back with my teams too, until they have some playoff success, this is a grossly overpaid group. It will only make sense if they have some playoff success. And so this isn't even real playoffs. This is a play-in. So they have to advance, and in my mind, they have to win at least one round for this to be considered any kind of a successful season for them. And not being hard, everyone thinks, oh, the Leafs fired you, you're mad. No, I'm just saying, any reasonable barometer would say, if you've been a cap team now every year, if you've got four guys making $40 million, for God's sake, it's time for some playoff success. And I think it's time. I think fans are said, okay, enough. So I do think it's a critical spring for Freddie. It's a critical spring for management. I think it's a critical spring for where they go with this team. I think it's poorly put together cap-wise. I've said this many times. Their salary cap concentration on four forwards is crazy. It's handcuffed them. So, yeah, I think if they don't have some success, people are going to be screaming and yelling.
I actually think you've been soft on them, to be honest with you. I don't think winning a round is successful at all. I think if they don't go to the conference final, it's an abject failure, Brian.
Yeah, well, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. I don't think they have the defense to get anywhere near the conference final, but I hope I'm wrong. See, and this is the part I'm a season ticket holder. We're a rights holder. When the Leafs do well, we do well. So mm-hmm. I hope I'm wrong. But I look at the teams they're going to have to beat, and I look at their defense. It's not good enough. They can play structured hockey. Like, one thing I liked about the Leafs this year is when they had a real bad game, they usually can't bounce back with a good structure game the next game. They were able to deal with the setback and play disciplined hockey, pay attention to detail. When they do that, and they are capable of doing it, they are a dangerous team. That and when they're paying attention to detail, they're hard to play against. But too many lapses for me.
Real quick, George is going to ask you one more, but why can't they do that consistently? Is that the coach's fault, period?
No, I don't think it's the coach's fault. If you watch them practice, they're doing all the right things, and the fact that they do it on one night and not the next, that's player error. I mean, clearly they know what to do. They've been taught what to do, and you can see it. Exhibit A, they got blown out by Tampa or whomever. Then the next night they played a great game. And so the players know. It's not like the system's foreign to them. They know what. They've done it. I've got proof. I can show you a video. So it's not the coach. They know how to do this. It's a player failure.
Brian, who has more pressure on them for the Leafs heading into this playoff, John Tavares or Auston Matthews?
Well, I think, well, first off, Auston Matthews might well have won the Richard Trophy if the season had finished the way he was playing. I think he's earned every dime he's been paid. I see a real progression in his game. I think Auston Matthews is determined to become a more three-zone player. And I'm not going to say 200-foot player because that term's overused, and he's not that good in all three zones yet. But in my mind, he made a conscious, deliberate effort to be more impactful in all three zones. On the forecheck, D-zone coverage, and he still scored 47 goals up to the pause. So I think he's made a great progression as a young player. I think there's more pressure on JT because he's JT, and he's been here, however many years now, and still no success. And he was the savior when he came here. So I think more on JT, but I think JT handles pressure really well. I don't think he feels it.
Before we let you go, last question. Your call in terms of the Stanley Cup final in this 2014 tournament, 12 in Edmonton, 12 in Toronto, who do you see making it to the final?
I'm the best team in the East is Tampa Bay, but Boston has played the best. So I would take Boston. And I'm taking St. Louis. I haven't seen any reason to believe that St. Louis won't repeat. They're the biggest and the best in the West, and I can't see them not doing it again.
Berkey, thanks a lot for doing this, man. Stay safe, take care of yourself, take care of your family, and I hope to see you soon, pal. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, you too.
That is Brian Burke, of course, and a gentleman who's done it all. He's won the Stanley Cup, and as you heard, George, I think he's being soft on the Leafs by saying they got to win a round. I think we're past winning a round, okay? They've lost to Boston a couple of times, and I will say the Leafs losing to Boston has been the bane of their existence. But at some point, you got to take a step up. And as Brian said about Auston Matthews, he's really made an effort to change his game and become more of a complete player. And if you watch Auston Matthews, yeah, he's got an unbelievable shot. He can change the angle, the trajectory. His release is the best in the league. With all due respect to Alex Ovechkin, his release is the best in the league from what I can see. And I will say this about Matthews. When you watch him, his takeaways, his back-checking and lifting the player stick who has the puck on the opposing team and taking him, I think he's third in the league in terms of takeaways. I need to see the Toronto Maple Leafs, George, play a harder game. And I'm not saying that they have to become tough and they have to become a team of thugs, because that's just not going to happen. That's not their character. But this team has been constructive to play beautiful hockey. And in the playoffs, you have to muck it up to a degree. You have to be willing to lose your front teeth. And this is the year that the Toronto Maple Leafs need to be willing to lose their front teeth to make it to the next round. And I think they can do it. I think they're getting more mature. They're getting older. They've seen what it's like to lose. They've done it a couple of times. And I think this is the year. And as you said, George, with Freddie Anderson, you got to hope that the fact that he hasn't been overworked and he's rested, look, everybody else is rested, but it has to play into his favor this year.
Well, I know you're talking about a harder game, but I don't, it's all about the success. And however they get there, I don't think it matters. I know fans are just pining for the Leafs to be that tough, playoff-hardened team. But if the Leafs can outskill and outskate teams come Stanley Cup playoff times and they're successful with it, who cares what the style is as long as the results are there? And the results haven't been there yet for this team, but they've had to run in to the Boston Bruins the last couple of years in these Stanley Cup playoffs. And yeah, Joey, this fan base has waited too long. It's time for these players to have some success. And I don't, and I agree with you. It's not only beating the Columbus Blue Jackets in this play-in round, it's also moving on into the, when we get to the 16 team real Stanley Cup playoffs, it's getting past that round as well and having a deep run in the playoffs because of the amount of money, because of the amount of salary cap space this team has or lack thereof. It's time for this team to perform and show that, you know, they're a legitimate team to win the Stanley Cup, because heading into the season, on paper, Joey, this has been the best Leafs team in over a decade. And I don't think there's any question. And it's time for them to do it on the ice. But the only thing is, nobody saw this pandemic coming. It could be a benefit for the Leafs, who had an up-and-down season, look great one night, look like garbage the next. I don't know how they're going to look out of this break. There's so many unknowns. There's so many question marks. But there's no excuses. It's time to win a playoff series. This fan base has waited way too long.
Yeah, I'm just going to say this, and we're going to take the break and come back in a moment here. But I have to say that the concentration of salary, as Brian Burke brought up, and the Toronto Maple Leafs having $40 million tied up in four forwards. Look, they're going to have to pay Morgan Rielly. Morgan Rielly may have the best deal in the league based on his ice time and his performance. And we're going to get to Buck Martinez and talk some Blue Jays and talk some baseball in the next segment. But real quick, the Leafs are now in a position where they have the experience, they have the talent, and Brian said they don't have the D, but you know what? A guy like Tyson Barrie and Morgan Rielly and Jake Muzzin, like right there, those are three really good defensemen. They may not be crease clearers. They're not guys who are whacking you on the back of the shins or cross-checking you in the back, but they are three very good defensemen. They all have good stick work. Muzzin's tough, and he can cross-check you in the back. But if Tyson Barrie can play to the level that he did in Colorado, where he was good defensively, he wasn't great, but he was good enough. And Morgan Rielly is good enough defensively, and he's great offensively. And Jake Muzzin is a guy that can play a bunch of minutes. If they stay healthy, their D is good enough. And they get goaltending out of Freddie Anderson, and they get the and the forwards can't disappear. They have to play tough. They have to play playoff hockey. The Leafs could go to the Stanley Cup final. Period. End of story. And this is the year that they have to do it. We're going to take the break and come back, and we are going to talk to a man who managed the Blue Jays, played for the Blue Jays, and now calls their games when we return on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It is Joey Vendetta along with George Russick, 8:32 on this July the 7th. We may get some showers later today, but it's going to hit 33 degrees at Celsius for those of you scoring along on the Fahrenheit scale. Tomorrow, nothing but sunshine, 34. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we're going to get some rain. My lawn is so pumped right now. My lawn is thirsty like a 47-year-old divorcee at a bar at 12:45. How's that for an analogy, George?
It's a bit of a stretch, but I can buy into it.
That's what I do here, George. I create stretching moments. They stretch your consciousness. And we've been asking people. What, go ahead, George. Can you say?
Can I just say quickly, Brian Burke was terrific, like usually is. I'm just a little disappointed we didn't get what cereal Brian Burke's into.
I forgot to ask him. So yeah, we've been taking people's texts on cereal and their favorite cereals or what they eat in the morning, because I started off with the whole taking an entire container of chocolate chip cookies, the Chips Ahoy, throwing them in a giant salad bowl, putting some milk in there, and mixing it up into a paste that you could use to finish your walls, if you had some plaster issues or maybe redo your driveway, but more importantly, that you could eat and is quite delicious. And we're joined now by a gentleman, as I said, played for the Blue Jays, managed the Blue Jays, calls the games now, and we have to ask Buck Martinez. Buck, first and foremost, good morning, but what is your go-to cereal, or what was your go-to cereal as a kid, and what is your morning ingestion of food now?
Well, Joey, this morning I actually made myself an egg white frittata, but my go-to cereal has always been Cheerios.
Oh, nice. You're the first guy to mention Cheerios. I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah.
That's
Cheerios are great. They're healthy, good for you, and everything.
Yeah, that's Mount Rushmore of cereal, Cheerios. I don't know how familiar you are with the Italian cookies, but the Biscotti Milano Ladyfingers. You ever see those big, long Ladyfingers?
Oh, yeah. Fingers? For
those sure. Those are... I know Italians that have built their houses out of those things. Use some plaster, use some Biscotti Milano. It's fantastic. A bit of an insulation issue, but other than that, they're fine. I have to ask you, Buck, what does this training camp, and training camp's a misnomer. Maybe it isn't a misnomer because it's summer camp, right? It's not spring training. The Jays are at the Rogers Center. What's it look like from a training perspective and a drills perspective, and being on turf the entire time for the training period?
Yeah. Well, the Blue Jays are actually pretty pleased with the way things are going right now. They have two sessions. One begins at 9:30. The second one begins at 3:30. And the last couple of days, they've had live batting practice where pitchers throw to hitters. And they really have an opportunity to recreate game-type at-bats. And yesterday, I know the hitters got as many as 8 at-bats, so they're getting a lot of swings. And from all reports that I've had, the hitters are really advanced. They're really coming into this thing having worked hard, and they're doing well. But it's a long day. The coaches obviously have to be there for the entire process, and they go from about 9:30 to about 6:30 every day. But they're getting their work in, and from all reports that I have had, it sounds like everybody's pretty pleased with the way the players have come into camp.
Buck, if and when baseball does return in a couple weeks, is there a big disadvantage for the hitters being off for so long facing major league pitching? And how long does that take for the hitters to catch up to the pitching?
Yeah, George, generally, you know, it takes 15, 20 games for hitters to get their timing in. But I think this is such an unusual situation that I think especially the younger players with so much enthusiasm, they've been chomping at the bit since March. They're ready to get back out there. I think the younger players are going to make the adjustment much quicker than the veteran players. I think they have more energy, more enthusiasm. It's kind of new to them. And you know what? They kind of play it like you did in high school and college. Hey, let's go to the ballpark, play the game. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of preparation. But I think this Blue Jays team is very young and very talented, and I think they got a chance to get off to a decent start.
So, Buck, we know that Baruchy and Hyunjin Ryu and Rourke are going to be in the mix, and Nate Pearson may or may not be in the mix, but what else are we hearing on the pitching side of things from this team? We know that the position players pretty much locked. You know, the outfield is a bit of a work in progress, but from the infield is going to be lights out for years to come. What do you see as far as the 4 and 5 guys in the rotation?
Well, obviously Chase Anderson's going to be in the mix, and Trent Thornton had a good year last year, and then you've got Anthony Kay and Thomas Hatch. There's so many good arms in this camp that I think starting pitching is not going to be a concern. Last year, of course, they used 21 starters, but the front office did a great job of shoring up the depth in their pitching rotation. And, you know, you mentioned Tanner Roark. He threw well. Matt Shoemaker's back. He missed most of last year, and he's a terrific pitcher and a great leader. I think that's the biggest thing about Matt Shoemaker is he will be the guy, the voice of this staff to say, hey, this is what we need to do. Hyunjin Ryu, according to all the reports, has really thrown the ball well. He's stayed in Florida the whole time. and he's in great shape. He's a real pro, and he's a guy that is going to lead this staff. But I don't think they have too many concerns with the depth of their starting pitching prospects. You mentioned Nate Pearson, and I believe he's going to pitch in the rotation before too long once this season gets going.
Buck, what is this going to mean? Because we're going to be starting in a pennant race right away because it's only a 60-game season. What is that going to mean for the Blue Jays and the development of these young players, especially on the positional side of things, moving forward to fast-track their development, playing all these meaningful games from the get-go?
Yeah, you know, I think this is a great opportunity for this young team because they're playing in the best division in baseball against the National League East, which is also an extremely talented division. So, I mean, this is what they're going to have to learn. If you want to be a champion, these are the teams you're going to have to beat. So I think it's a good barometer for them to test themselves as to how good they are, where they need to improve, and how much work they've got to put in. And, you know, they're very aware. And when you have a young guy like Bo Bichette, leading the way, he's the guy that is so driven to win. He doesn't want to be just a major leaguer. He wants to be a major league star, and he wants to be a World Series champion. And when those things come together, everybody else kind of follows in line. So I think, you know, they understand the challenge of playing in the American League East and playing the National League East in this unusual season. But I think it's a great test for them and will give them a good idea what they need to do going forward.
Okay, Buck, the Jays open in St. Petersburg against the Rays on the 24th. Then they will be playing the Washington Nationals in a split four-game series. They're supposed to come back to the Rogers Center. They may have them at Buffalo. We don't know really where the Blue Jays are going to be playing yet. It hasn't been confirmed. We know that if they have their way, they want to play at the Rogers Center. But I got to ask you this question because you've experienced it. And I'm not saying you've done this, but Major League Baseball has stories, legendary stories of players having many romantic partners on the road. There have been players who've had dual lives and had different families in different cities. What is the temptation going to be like for these players when they go to Florida on the 24th and they get the text messages from their friends that are in these towns saying, hey, I'd love to see you, and they're in a bubble and they can't see anybody? You have to think that that seal is going to get broken at some point.
I don't think there's a possibility of that happening with this team. I think they are so focused and so motivated. I mean, they have had something taken away from them, just like everybody in the world, for the last 3 months. And they understand the ramifications if they stray off campus. And not only does it affect them, it affects their teammates, it affects their teammates' families, it affects the staff. Everybody. So I think the peer pressure is going to be dramatic in that they have said time and time again, hey, fellas, we have to follow the protocol. We have to stay united as a team. And this is a real good chance to build a team personality and a chemistry that hasn't happened very often. But I don't think the Blue Jays are going to have any problems with anybody straying off campus at home or on the road.
I know we talked about pitching, but Buck, how exciting is the prospect of watching Nate Pearson pitch in these games? And how refreshing is it that the Blue Jays have a young prospect who can hit triple digits on the radar gun?
Well, not only can he hit triple digits, which I'm not really a big fan of, I don't care about velocity, this kid could pitch. And we saw a taste of it in the spring training. He was dramatic in his opportunity to pitch. And when you look at his numbers in spring training, he threw 7 innings, gave up 2 hits, and struck out 11. And it was easy for him. He wasn't in awe of pitching to major league pitchers. He's got a bunch of different pitches. He understands the art of pitching at a young age. And he is motivated. He's got a terrific routine. So I'm not so concerned about him throwing 100 miles an hour as I am about watching him pitch, because he's a polished young man. Now he's got to do it in the big leagues, but, you know, he's 24 years old. It's time for his clock to start ticking. But what he did in spring training was pretty impressive. He had a couple of hiccups early on, and he made adjustments, but he had 7 strong innings in spring training. And I think everybody understands that this young man has a chance to be really special.
Our guest is Buck Martinez, the voice of the Blue Jays, and, of course, the soundtrack of our youth as Jays fans. And Buck, before we let you go, we know that Bo Bichette, and we know that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Kevin Biggio, as you described, they're young leaders and they're guys that are going to deliver. You've got an outfield that has a few question marks. Randall Grichuk is a guy that's always produced in the second half. He's almost a different player. And we know that timing-wise, this season's going to start where the second half of the season will be. What do you look for from Grichuk and also Teoscar Hernandez, who has the talent? This guy's body, this guy's a truck. You know, he's built like a superstar outfielder. But at some point, the old "you have the tools with no toolbox" cliche has to come to pass, and you have to develop the toolbox along with the tools. Do we see that from Teoscar, and what do we expect from Grichuk coming out of the gate?
Well, first of all, Teoscar is a really intriguing player, as you mentioned. I mean, he'll show you a streak of 3 or 4 weeks where he looks like one of the most powerful hitters in the game, and he'll hit balls to the deepest parts of any ballpark. And we saw that a couple of years ago at Fenway Park. Yesterday, he hit a ball at the bottom of the video screen at Rogers Center during live BP, not during batting practice, but against a starting pitcher. And for Randall, he's got the same kind of power. I think for both of these guys, the biggest thing is a daily focus and concentration. Because when they are focused and they are locked in, they can do things as well as anybody in the game. But it seems as though maybe because Teoscar has been in and out of the lineup, but now is the time in his career where he needs to really get focused and come together and put everything together. He's 28 years old now, and it's time for him to step up and say, okay, I want to be an everyday player, take the job, and he's probably going to start out playing in right field. Randall will probably start out playing in center field, and Gurriel will play in left. So it's a pretty good outfit if they all play up to their potential. But I think neither Grichuk nor Hernandez have reached their full potential yet, and I think that day is coming very soon.
Buck, thank you very much for being on the program. We wish you the best of luck this season. It's going to be an interesting one. Blue Jays kick off the 24th in Tampa against the Rays. Buck Martinez will be calling it. Take care of yourself, Buck, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me this morning. You guys have a great day.
That is Buck Martinez. We're going to take the break and come back and wrap up the program. It's Vendetta. It's Russick. It's leadoff. It's 8:45 and a high of 34 with some showers perhaps later this afternoon. We will take the break and come back and wrap up the show in a moment. Minutes in front of 9 o'clock. It is a lovely day here in the Southern Ontario area. It's Joey Vendetta along with George Russick. And we are looking forward to Chipper Jones on Good Show this morning and Ed Olczyk and Phil Pritchard, keeper of the cup, on Hockey Central at noon here on this July the 7th. Actually, it's July the 8th. Yesterday was July the 7th. George, today is going to be beautiful. Will you be golfing? Will you be working on your white feet with your ankle tan? And will you be heading to the Sundowner? Because the patio will be open. The Sundowner, for those of you that don't know, is an adult establishment in the Niagara Falls area. I, of course, have never been there, but George apparently goes.
No, I've never been there as well. I've just heard things. And apparently they're opening their patio this weekend, which would be interesting. I might be hitting a
ripper bar with a patio has got to be an interesting concept.
Yeah. I don't know how that's going to work.
I'm going to tell you something. They better hand out a lot of sunblock to the employees. That's all I'm saying.
Probably.
Cause if you break the seal, you got to be careful with no sunblock.
I might be hitting the driving range tonight, but, golfing Friday after the show. So excited about that.
Hey, yeah, how about Buck Martinez? Sorry to interrupt, because I got to get this in before we end the show, George.
Sure.
Because we were asking people about their favorite cereals, and Buck said Cheerios. And this morning, people were talking about Social Tea biscuits. You know, the Lady Milano, the Lady Fingers from Biscotti Milano, and, of course, the chocolate chip cookies and Cheerios, like Buck said. But when I asked Buck if any of those players, the young guys, when they're in Tampa and they get a text from one of their lady friends or whoever it is they're into, and they don't leave the bubble, right? What I really want to ask him, he said, no, that's not going to happen with this team. What about Reese McGuire? He won't leave the bubble. He'll just stay in his car. He can handle his business in his car. Like, give me a break that these guys aren't going to be tempted to leave the bubble.
If there's,
I guarantee you, there's going to be a player on the Toronto Blue Jays who leaves the bubble. Okay, guaranteed.
If there's one player that kind of welcomed the distraction of the pandemic, it's probably Reese McGuire.
Yeah. You think? The Reese McGuire story kind of went away.
Yeah. And he pleaded no contest this week in Florida to the Chargers. So,
dude, if Reese McGuire wants to meet me at the Sundowner today, I will buy him an adult beverage on the patio. Or it's tomorrow.
It's so awkward.
What's awkward? The Sundowner or Reese McGuire?
No, the Reese McGuire story is so awkward. Like, what do you say? Like, what's there to say? How do you have a take on the Reese McGuire story?
That you should stay home. If you're gonna engage in that sort of thing, stay home.
So
when you
awkward.
Do. Yeah, it is a little bit awkward. So, thanks to all our guests this morning, by the way. John Tory, the mayor. You can go to the fan website if you want to hear the interview with John Tory. He was great explaining the protocols and how we're going to be moving forward into phase three. And look, Toronto, give yourself some credit. You have handled this incredibly well. I know it hasn't been easy. I understand that you want to go out, you want to do things, you want to gather, you want to hang out with people. But so far, we have handled this much better than many of the U.S. cities that are now seeing cases exploding again because they just couldn't wait to get out, drink, stumble, fall all over each other, not wear masks, and now they are paying the price. Also, our thanks to Brian Burke for joining us and Buck Martinez as well. And of course, George, I would be remiss if I didn't say a hearty thank you to our production staff of Mike Gentile, who puts the show together, and Vic Palatian, who lives in a palatial estate. I think it's 400 square feet, and he is the actual technical producer. And of course, Hayden Matheson, who I've yet to meet. I don't know if he's a real person. I think he may actually work at a Panzerotti shop somewhere because he really hasn't done anything on this show. But, George, have you met this individual, Hayden, who I see on emails but not sure if he's a real person?
Yeah, he's lovely.
That wasn't the word that I was looking for. Okay, so
lovely.
Hayden, George is going to buy you an adult beverage at the Sundowner tomorrow when it opens. Have yourselves a great day. George, we will chat tomorrow. Thanks again.
Sounds good.
And good show is up next.